All right, good morning, everybody. I'll call to order the regularly scheduled Board of Supervisors meeting for this Tuesday, October 9th, 2018, and ask if everybody would please join the board as we honor America with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
So, good morning again. It is absolutely time for the rain to stop. We'll talk more about this when we get our report from our county engineer, but everybody does need to know that we are going to experience, or projected to experience, some minor flooding, especially along the Skunk and Southern Story County. Please don't drive through standing water. We say that time and time again, and inevitably we get somebody who decides that they can be the one who makes it through standing water. Please nobody drive through standing water. First item on our agenda, as always, is public comment number one. This is an opportunity for members of the public to address topics on today's agenda, or really anything you'd like to address. Anybody wishing to do so, come on up. And seeing no one moving immediately to the microphone, we'll go to a presentation of a plaque to the Board of Supervisors commemorating Manufacturing Day. Drew and Dustin, so we had a great day Friday where we got to welcome the governor, and we got to visit 3M and EB and Burke, and which is part of Hormel, on some of the expansion plans they have. I thought it was a fantastic day. All three of us were able to attend. Take us through what's going on today.
Oh, yeah, sure. So we really kind of blew it up for the first time this year in 2018 for Manufacturing Day 2018, which was on Friday, October 5th. And we actually had reached out to the governor because we had a kind of an unprecedented historical kind of month at the Iowa Economic Development Authority board meeting in September. We had three projects go for high-quality jobs. They totaled about $186 million in capital investment, created about 330 jobs. And not only did we have those three, we had two in the innovation funds as well. We had AutoMed, who's looking at going into Huxley, and we had Nebulum, who's currently in the startup factory down in the research park, get some money as well to do some critical investments in technology and critical staff. So the coolest thing about that is we had the largest of largest multinationals, 3M, Hormel, and then we had the smallest of startups with Nebulum and AutoMed all getting assistance, and that was something that we thought was really, really cool and deserved to be received some highlighting. So what we did on Friday is we actually brought the governor up, and she said this was a no-brainer for her. She said it was Manufacturing Day. We had a community, a county, where there was three large companies that, like I said, received about $186 million in state assistance in the month of September. So we came up and we celebrated that, and she went and visited each of the different facilities, and so I got a tour and talked about what was going to be happening there. But then, as you said, all three of you were able to make it. Then we had a reception at 3M that really kind of capped it all off, and we presented the governor with this, but we also wanted to take the time to make sure we presented the Board of Supervisors with this as well, because you guys have been such great partners and really making sure that we have an environment and a business climate that allows things like this to happen. And there's a reason people keep investing in us. CNBC just on Friday, I think when we were at the governor's reception, announced that we were the number one job market in the country, and then we're in the number one state in the country per U.S. News and World Report. So there's a lot of good things happening in Story County, and we just wanted to commemorate it by presenting you with this plaque and thanking you for the work you guys do on our behalf.
Outstanding. Well, we'll do a photo op in just a second. So what's cool to me, multiple things are cool to me about this, but those are three traditional manufacturing companies, right? These are manufacturing jobs that we're talking about adding. Do you have the stats? How many manufacturing jobs are there in Story County right now?
A little over 9,000.
Mm-hmm. And what's the average wage for those 9,000?
Under 60.
Just under 60,000 a year? Mm-hmm. So really good jobs that we're talking about. You said, 330 jobs. Really good jobs that we're talking about.
All of the jobs that were put on the proposals for those jobs, whether they qualified or did not qualify for state assistance, were all over $15 an hour.
Okay. Good questions or comments for Drew or Dustin?
No, it wasn't that long ago. You would only have to turn on the TV or pick up a newspaper to say manufacturing is left. Turn off the lights. I don't believe it's true, and I think you have tangible proof that's not true. So I'm glad it found Story County.
And one thing we did want to do, too, we did another thing to kind of commemorate the day on behalf of our manufacturers, and we just wanted to play this video that B&G Productions put together for us for manufacturing.
Our family-owned company has been based in Story County since it was founded in 1884. We pride ourselves on our high-quality job opportunities that offer employees the ability to grow as well as knowledge and skill. This is how Story grows.
positive impact gives us reason to continue to invest and grow in this community. This is how Story grows.
Originating in Homer Island, our company continues to expand within the Hope Bay corridor and remain engaged in the community.
To invest in the growing community, we kept our business local and expanded our operations in rural Story County. This is how Story grows.
Was an involved member of the Ames and Story County communities since we began operations in 1970. We continue to invest in our operations and team, growing into a world-class bracing manufacturer. This is how Story grows.
Our family business has been fortunate to call Story County home for the past 41 years. We are proud of our results-driven staff that take these 9 challenges and provide custom manufacturing solutions for our first clientele. This is how Story grows.
As the Northern Anchor of Story County, we continue to cultivate our manufacturing footprint by offering our employees the ability to grow within our company. This is how Story grows.
Our Story County manufacturers help drive the economy through their historic growth, investment, hiring, and wages. It is truly an exciting time in Story County. As we continue to cultivate these relationships, the industry becomes more diverse, flooding the job market and career opportunities. Our communities employ over 9,000 people in manufacturing alone. This is how Story grows.
Excellent. Really good.
Thank you again.
We'll do a quick photo op and then we'll get going. Everybody slide this way.
Okay. I'm going to take three and three and count them first. 1, 2, 3.
One more. Yep. Everybody stay
open. With your elbow.
I don't want to get out of the way.
Do it again.
1, 2, 3.
1, 2, 3. Dustin, good job.
Okay.
Thank you.
I'm so excited.
All right, next is consideration of proclamation declaring October National Community Planning Month. It's outstanding that we get to talk about the growth going on in Story County, and now we get to talk about how we plan for that growth. Jerry Moore.
Hi, Jerry. Segue, right? We want to thank the Story County Planning and Zoning Commission for their work and direction that they've given staff. We're working on a lot of good, important things. Ordinances, work program things, and their input has been very valuable. We want to thank the board for the vision and the direction that you've given us in the community planning that we've done. I want to reach out to the planning staff for their dedication to the work that they do every day. They bring it. I'm very proud of them. I appreciate their work. We also want to reach out to all the planners and planning commissions in the cities, in the county, for their and in support and direction of their community vision. We want to thank Leanne and Matt for the assistance that they're providing in bringing attention to the Community Planning Month with things that they're doing on social media, press releases. We're also going to be doing some things on our website. And the last thing I want to talk about is an open house that we're planning October 26th from 2 to 4 at the Planning and Development Office. We want to use this opportunity to reach out to citizens to communicate with them about things that we've been working on, things that we're working on now, and we want to invite them and encourage them to come in and talk about their projects. So thank you for your support. And
yeah, so I'll read in the proclamation and then we'll vote on it, but I want to say thank you to you, Jerry, and your staff. all of your staff, but we've got Amelia and Emily here. Thank you to you guys for the work you do. One thing that I've really appreciated is the concerted effort that you guys are making to reach out to the development community as we go through the process of looking at ordinances. I think it's important. I mean, clearly we get to hear a lot of feedback from the development community when they're dealing with our ordinances. I really like that you guys are making a concerted effort to get feedback as proposed ordinances are developed, and we recognize that every hoop that we make the development community jump through is an increased cost, and I like the way you're working on that.
We appreciate that.
I like the way that you are balancing the concerns of people who are concerned about water quality, land use, et cetera, and getting the impact and assessing that also, because having been in the community for a while and having covered development for many years, I know that you can face extreme organized push.
We appreciate that also. There's many sides to the issues that we work on, and it's important that we get input from all sides.
Mm-hmm. Marty, anything?
Appreciate the time that the staff, we're smiling at each other right now because I come down often. This is an office I spend a lot of time in physically for the fact that as I have material presented that we bring to the table to discuss, I can read it and I think I know what I'm looking at, but I always want to vet it with them to see what they can offer in addition to what's printed and given to me, because they give context and depth, and I do thank them.
Absolutely. All right, so Community Planning Month proclamation, whereas change is constant and affects all cities, towns, suburbs, counties, boroughs, townships, rural areas, and other places, and whereas community planning and plans can help manage this change in a way that provides better choices for how people work, live, and play, and whereas community planning provides an opportunity for all residents to be meaningfully involved in making choices that determine the future of their community, and whereas the full benefits of planning requires public officials and citizens who understand, support, and demand excellence in planning and plan implementation, and whereas the month of October is designated as National Community Planning Month throughout the United States of America and its territories, and whereas the American Planning Association and its professional institute, the American Institute of Certified Planners, endorse National Community Planning Month as an opportunity to highlight the contributions, sound planning, and planned implementation make to the quality of our settlements and environment, and whereas the celebration of National Community Planning Month gives us the opportunity to publicly recognize the participation and dedication of the members of planning commissions and other citizen planners who have contributed their time and expertise to the improvements of Story County, Iowa, and whereas we recognize the many valuable contributions made by community and regional planning professionals in and near Story County, Iowa, and extend our thanks for the continued commitment to public service. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the month of October 2018 is hereby designated as Community Planning Month in Story County, Iowa, in conjunction with the celebration of the National Community Planning Month, adopted this ninth day of October 2018, and signatures from the three of us. Questions or comments, or just a hearty thank you to Jerry, your staff, and everybody you mentioned.
Thank you to the board. We appreciate your assistance and support.
Anything else? I'd take a motion to adopt this proclamation.
Move consideration of the proclamation declaring October National Community Planning Month.
Second.
Motion in a second. Chitty.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Thanks, Jerry.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jerry.
Next is consideration of minutes from October 2nd.
Move as presented.
Second.
Motion is second. Olson.
Aye.
Chitty.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Personnel actions as listed, board.
As listed.
Second.
Motion in a second. Chitty.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Consent agenda.
Move as presented.
Second.
Motion in a second. Olson.
Aye.
Chitty.
Aye.
Sanders, aye. Consent agenda passes. Public hearing items. Consideration of Resolution 1929 expressing an intent to authorize a tax increment revenue loan agreement for and not to exceed $1 million. Leanne Harder. Hi, Leanne.
Good morning.
Yeah.
I actually do not have a PowerPoint presentation. I think you've been through this one often enough. This is kind of the housekeeping phase that sets the stage for the treasurer to go out and receive bids so that we can then enter into a loan agreement later on in a couple months.
Well, thank you.
for the remaining $1 million for the Tedesco Environmental Learning Corridor. You will recall in August and September, you amended the plan, the urban renewal area plan, in essence, to include this third and final phase. This is the third iteration of the process that we've been through. Today's action is a public hearing, and the resolution simply is saying forth that we intend to go out and get bids and look at those responses and then go and enter into a tax increment revenue loan agreement. There's a 15-day appeal period that begins today. Appeals of this decision can go to the district court. And then on the 30th, the treasurer may distribute the bid sheet for soliciting bids from local banks. She actually can do that right after our public hearing, but really can't take any action. So Treasurer Tweet will work that in her schedule. On November 13th, we'll be back in front of you with those responses. And then a week later, on the 20th, will be the actual resolution approving the loan agreement. Are there any questions?
No, very straightforward.
I did not. I'm sorry. It's kind of been crazy.
I would like to just give you a review of where we're at currently and what the estimated new debt would be. I'm estimating that on
3% interest. I have absolutely no idea what kind of interest rates are going to come back, but we're ranging on the current bonded debt for TIF in the 1.95 to 2.75% right now. So since interest rates have crept up, that's where we're at. And at this point in time, there are two that have not come on yet for revenues, and then they'll come on gradually like the other ones did. So the best I'm doing right now is giving you a $900,000 estimate for projected TIF revenues in the upcoming years. But
yeah,
the
other part that I would add to this is I know there's going to be conversation down at the State House. So right now, these wind turbines' maximum assessed value is 30%. But they also get the 10% rollback.
Rollback, right.
There's a real move that says, wait a minute, that's double dipping. You shouldn't get, I mean, the 30% is supposed to be what you're getting. It's not 30%
plus
10 plus more percent.
Plus 10 more percent.
I would expect that to get addressed this year as well. Just underscoring that these are estimates.
Right, and that's why I put ease everywhere, because that's all I have is estimates at this point in time. So.
Yep. So this is the third time we've been through this for Tedesco. We went through it a couple times with Dakin's Lake. Questions or comments as we go through the process?
I appreciate seeing an updated chart here. Thank you for doing this. It really still shows that we have low use as far as low debt.
Low debt for this, right.
There's no question or comments. I'd take Marty, anything, and then we'll do the public hearing.
Nothing. I appreciate this. Has got to be hot off the press.
Yeah.
Well, you don't have anything else going on across the hall, so that's perfect.
Not like your office isn't taking care of
it. We don't have anything else going on right now, so yeah.
Appreciate the work that you guys did to put this out.
All right, so let's open the public hearing and ask if there's anybody who would like to address Resolution 1929. Last chance. All right, we'll close the public hearing and turn to the board for action.
I move Resolution 19-29 expressing intent to authorize a TIF loan agreement for and not to exceed $1 million.
I second.
Motion and a second. This is third and final phase of Tedesco that we're talking about. Anything further? Chitty?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. 1929 passes. Thanks, Leanne.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Two additional items, consideration of Resolution 1936, an appropriation amendment. You should have just stayed up here, Lisa.
I didn't look at the agenda very closely.
Lisa, Lisa.
Okay, so Marty asked me yesterday, is this a little early for this? Don't you usually wait a little longer? And I said, well, it depends on the year. Appropriation amendment is for the remaining 50% for the elected officials, and 45% additional, so that we're at 95% for all the departments. Typically I'd come to you with this in November-ish, but I think we need to do this at this point in time. We budgeted pretty tight, and there's departments that are needing the rest of the appropriation right now. So.
But important to note, 100% of what we budgeted
for elected officials, right?
Mm-hmm. And only 95% of what we budgeted everywhere else.
Correct.
Questions or comments, board?
None.
Okay. If there's none, I'd take a motion.
I move that we adopt Resolution 1936 to distribute appropriations, amend the appropriations distribution, as noted.
Second.
Motion and a second, and I'll just underscore one more time. This is what was budgeted. Nothing more, nothing less. Well, 5% less for some of our offices. Other comments?
Mm-hmm.
Olson.
Aye.
Chitty.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. 1936 passes. Next, and if you're looking at our blue screen up there, you know that this is a timely conversation. Discussion and consideration for updated audiovisual solution for the public meeting room. Joel.
Aye.
Hi, Joel. It's fitting that you're wearing a blue shirt as we're right. Looking at this blue screen.
We had a nice Smurf presentation earlier there. So I don't know how much of this quote and email you got to look through for Barb, but we contacted about 6 vendors around the state to get quotes to replace what's existing in our boardroom here, which I think was put in around 2005. So we've definitely got our mileage out of it. We whittled that down to 2 vendors and ended up going with Marco, who we have a representative from here today in case she has some extra questions. If you look at the quote, this is a replacement for all of what we've got here. The 2 main concerns, of course, being the projector and the problem that you've had with the audio being mismatched based on whatever microphone's on. This quote, of course, will address both of those things for you. We do have some optional items on the quote. If you look towards the end, we've got 3 different screens that we're going to be presenting to you as options. One would be a drop-down screen similar to what you have today. Barb's had some discussions with you folks, and you said that a drop-down screen isn't necessarily necessary. So we looked at 2 other options for that. One of them is a fixed screen, and the other one is what they call an ambient light rejecting screen, which I know sounds like a very fancy term, but when Alyssa and Loris were down there and looked at the different screen materials, we think the ambient light rejecting screen, which is the last option, the 120-inch on that quote, is probably the one you're going to want to have. And what that's going to do for you is an ambient light rejecting screen takes only the light from the projector and all the lights in the room it rejects. So it basically takes your projector and makes it look like a big TV. Now, it's a little more expensive, but where I think you're going to see the benefit on that is for folks that are out in the audience, they won't see a washed-out picture. So if you're in the back row or something, the screen will look nice and bright and crisp. So all of your presentation material will look good no matter where you're at in the room.
Yeah.
So, Joel, my first comment here is just to kind of clear up and clarify that while what was posted on our website for the agenda, it said proprietary, mm-hmm. and the kind of mini PowerPoint with all of the pieces of equipment had no dollar amount attached to them. However, a quote is not a proprietary thing. So we are talking about dollar amounts that the public can receive that information. We'll probably discuss some dollar amounts here today. But so I think that was just a misunderstanding as far as what information was allowed or has to be released, actually.
Right.
Okay, so super. Then the next thing is that when Alyssa and I went to the presentation, which, by the way, staff, heads up, just wonderful job in trying to take the vision of us plus the needs and put that into descriptions so that the 2 companies could build. But we were talking about $42,000.
Mm-hmm.
It's also the amount that was budgeted. And the quote that some of us have in front of us is at $49,000. So we've got a $7,000 difference, not including the screen, which would be roughly another $3,500.
Yeah, we're $10,000 beyond
right.
what we budgeted.
Right, beyond what we budgeted. Can you help about what items that we added that really brought that price up over what the presentation price was from 3 weeks ago.
I think part of it is that the main quote has the screen in there that is the drop-down. There will be a slight savings going to the fixed screen with the ambient light rejecting. So, unless I'm incorrect, okay. Unless I'm incorrect, the original quote here, you'll actually see go down some whenever we replace the drop-down motorized screen with the fixed screen that offers the ambient light rejection. That's still going to give you a bit of a delta between that $42,000. I think that'll probably take it down to the $47,000 to $48,000 range, just doing the math in my head. As far as where that $5,000 comes in the quote, I'd have to look at what was originally quoted and what was modified. I believe some of what was changed in here and added on would be more towards the microphones and addressing some of the audio mismatch. I know that when we originally quoted it, we weren't necessarily looking at replacing a lot of the DSPs, which is a fancy word for a machine that basically takes the microphone sounds in there, looks at it digitally, and tries to equalize it. Now, like I said, our equipment is from 2005, so it's in electronic terms, a dinosaur. So I think part of that is that we decided later in the quoting process to basically replace what was in there and not try to reuse it to make sure that whatever we put in, you know, can actually equalize the audio better for you. And, of course, the projection system that we're quoting here has a laser light source, which basically means no bulb replacement. I don't know if – I think Rick might have been in here whenever we replaced the bulb in that projector, but it was about $800. So you're going to see at least that savings, if not two bulbs, over the lifetime of that unit, because we would expect whatever we put in here, again, to last another 10 to 15 years for you folks.
As I understood the microphone situation with the replacement of the equipment over at the clerk's desk and our desire to get some equalization of sound, okay, that it requires different microphones. Is that correct?
I think that the quote that we've got here in front of us is going to reuse some of the microphones that we've got as far as the goosenecks up there. I don't think that they found it was necessary to replace them. Because the new equipment that will take the microphones will be better able to equalize when you move away from the microphone or towards it. But I think, and Aaron, you can tell me, were we going to replace the wireless mics as part of this?
No,
the wireless mics stay? Okay. So really the microphones are going to be addressed on the back end. The existing equipment will be used, but how it's processed and what you'll get from your sound whenever you put a video up or listen to the board minutes that are recorded will be much better.
And then there in the request or that was put out by staff in soliciting the quotes, we wanted to look to the future. Okay, for capacity. And one of the ones that came up right away is there would be two camera angles installed for use in the future if we ever went to something interactive or if we went to split screen at some point, even post-production or post-event. So that was included in the quote.
Actually, this particular quote, there's two phases to each of these quotes we got from Embarket and Marco. And Aaron, this does not have the cameras on it, right?
Yeah. Oh, it does not?
No.
So it's even more.
Yeah. All of the vendors that we quoted from, because the initial quote for the audio video replacement was just to replace what we basically got here and make it better. Down the road, we have added to each of these quotes the capacity to add on. So if you decide that you want to come back and add cameras to the room, the ability eventually to stream or something like that, this system will have the capacity built into it to be able to have that plug right in. It is not in this quote, though, because it was not considered part of the original intent for this piece.
So, Aaron, if we could bring up...
Sure.
Okay. Aaron from Marco.
Morning.
Good morning, Aaron.
Good morning.
Yeah, if you could introduce yourself.
Yeah, I'm Aaron. I'm the technology advisor with Marco.
Okay.
that did the presentation. Well, worked with these guys on the proposal and also did a presentation for what?
Super. Aaron, do me a favor and turn the microphone forward just so that you can
sure.
One of the reasons you're here.
I pretty love voice.
So, Joel talked a little bit about the difference in the quote, but can you help me understand the rest of the $7,000 difference?
I was looking right now through that to figure out what we changed.
Because I apologize. I did think the cameras were...
Yeah, but now, so the $42,000 that we originally budgeted was based on a broad estimate
correct.
That IT did early on. And so getting these bids, which specifically address, and what I'm hearing is specifically address upgrading what we have now, but not adding anything. So it would be new projector, new screen,
right.
new way to that we receive the audio, not necessarily new microphones.
Right.
So we estimated early, but 8 months ago, that it was going to be $42,000, and now it's $49,000.
Yeah, and then I understand on our part of the estimate, I was more in how we got a $7,000 swing from what was presented when Alyssa and I went down to IT.
I think part of what increased it, too, was as we went on with the project, the additional capacity to add two cameras and mux that signal together into a recorder requires that we buy switching equipment with more inputs. So I think part of that is to add for the future, so that if we do decide to add, you know, one to two cameras or whatever we decide we want to add, it's there. We don't have to throw away equipment we just bought to replace it with something that can handle the cameras.
And this also then does not include the ability to add on viewers outside of the room. Correct.
You were talking about like the spillover area and stuff,
right.
being able to put the audio and video in there. It has the capacity for that, but it is not part of this quote.
Good. Other questions? Hey, you were part of this all the way through, Morris.
Mm-hmm.
So we're counting on you to make sure that we're headed in the right direction. I mean, clearly, well, you said 2005 for this. I mean, we
yeah.
got the good we're going to get
yes.
out of this screen. As we've seen from the last few board of supervisor meetings, sometimes our audio is picked up, sometimes it's not. So this is something we need to do. I actually view I've got it as we're talking about spending an additional $82 by going from the drop-down screen to the screen that I guess you guys are recommending
right.
for us. But we're still in that $49,000 range if we go with this proposal.
Right.
Marty, questions or comments?
No, just following the conversation, we started with a swag 8 months ago, and I knew that we had a need to address. I'm not going to get caught up too hard on the dollars, considering how long you amortize it out. I mean, we clearly want to do something better than we have today, and I think that's where we're going. So I'm just kind of watching the conversation. I'm getting, you know, I'm not going to go too deep in the weeds. You got that one.
All right, so other questions or comments?
I just want to say that I was very impressed with Marco's presentation, but even more, no offense, Aaron, but the engineer, is that what his name was, who came along to answer the technical and interact with the three IT people about what would be set up, when, et cetera. The conversation flowed. It was able to track it, and it sounded like everyone was on the same page and everyone understood our needs, including future that might be on the hopes and wishes list for the future. So I feel comfortable with the selection as Marco as a vendor.
Okay. Super. Well, appreciate the time that you spent. Appreciate the time that all our staff spent looking at this. As I said early on, I just want something that works. I mean, that's our responsibility is to have something that we can work and we can give public presentations and do what we need to do in this room. Looks to me like we're getting there. So it looks to me like we will decline. What I'm hearing is we're going to decline the $3,503 that's built in for the drop-down
correct.
Screen, but instead would add the $3,585 for the parallax fixed frame screen, which
correct.
You say is going to give us better resolution.
Yes.
You agree with both of those, Laura?
Both of those.
Okay. How about since you represented us on this thing, you make the motion.
Okay. I'm I move that we accept Marco's quote of $49,015 with the substitution, with the removal of the identify drop-down screen and the addition of the Parallax fixed frame screen.
Yeah, and so just so we're all on the same page, that means the new total, as I do the math, would be $49,097. What I'm going to ask for, assuming this passes, I'm going to ask you guys to draft a new agreement that has exactly what we're getting and the exact dollar amount. Board can go ahead and take action right now that as long as that's what the new contract says, I can sign it as chair and execute it. Sorry. Good with that?
I'm good with that. With that change.
Okay. Marty?
Second.
Yep. Further discussion?
None.
Olson?
Aye.
Chee?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Thank you guys.
Thank
you.
For
the new contract.
Thank you guys. Appreciate your work on it.
All right. Next item is consideration of action to reject all bids received on September 28, 2018 for the request for proposal for the Story County Justice Center re-roofing project. That's Joby and Leanne. So we had a snafu, I guess,
yeah,
in that we had a couple different...
What we traced it down to was we had a draft document that inadvertently got attached after we had an addendum to the... to the package. So when it was brought to our attention, we decided the best course of action was to reject all bids and start over.
Okay. Questions? Go ahead, Leanne.
Just so then know that all three bids we received had been returned back to the vendors.
Unopened.
Unopened via certified mail. And that was done a week ago yesterday.
Board, any questions or comments?
Leaving the roof undone through the winter months will not be a problem?
Ideally, it would have been nice to have it done before winter hit. But at this point, Marty, it's held up fairly well the last few weeks, so I'm hopeful that we won't run into any major issues this winter. But until it starts freezing, I can't answer that 100%. I wish I could, Marty.
Yep. But well, we can't do what we can't do legally.
Right.
So, this is where we are. And so run through the new schedule for us, please.
We'll be back in front of you next Tuesday to actually have a new RFP reviewed and approved. We'll release that, have a mandatory pre-bid meeting on October 26th. However, those that did attend that initially are exempt from attending that. We'll count their attendance already. We're going to do the same process as before, do questions and then answers via our website. Bids will be due, proposals will be due by 9:30 in the morning on November 13th, which is a Tuesday, and then we would actually open them at that meeting. 30 minutes later, yeah. We just wanted to allow some time to make sure we got them stamped and compiled and everything. And then the 13th through 15th, the committee would review them, bring forth a recommendation on the 20th, and then the contract would go into effect on the 27th of November, with the end of construction hopefully by March 1st of 2018.
Okay. Questions or comments or a motion?
I would, reflecting the new reality we have, I would move consideration to reject all bids as received on September 28th. And the request for an RFP from the Story County Justice Center re-roofing project as presented.
Second.
Motion and second. Further discussion? Chee?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you,
next item is discussion and direction regarding our draft strategic plan. So this is the third iteration of our strategic plan. Leanne, take us through what we have in blue.
So what is before you definitely is in a draft format, maybe a little bit more revised draft than the board has seen already, and I'll go through that process here shortly. As you'll recall, we did an RFP for this as well, selected a consultant earlier this spring, went through a planning process that I'm not going to reiterate. It is outlined on page 2 of the draft plan that's before you. Following that, though, once we got an earlier draft in August, sent it through you all, took those comments, digested them with JEO, really tried to define the plan and the targeted goals in a more general term rather than such department-specific, which I'm sure the board members will recall is very, very specific. I hate to say this, too much specificity for a strategic plan and to guide the workings of Story County. Those are more work program items is what we responded to. Had great cooperation and discussions with JEO guiding us through this process, and they will actually be here to actually present the final one. But after today's meeting, following your input, distribute it to the management team for their feedback, and then JEO will be here on the 30th of this month for final presentation.
Leanne, about that schedule, okay? So are we going to have a ability for the public to weigh in prior to the vote by us and the final presentation? Will it go out on the website for input outside again?
We've never really done that.
Okay.
For a strategic plan in the past.
Well, so strategic plan, as it's been, so the, as I said earlier, this is the third iteration. Leanne, we did the first one in Story County's history when? 2012 or 13?
13.
2013. We worked through that one. We did the second one. Led us to a full comprehensive plan, which included Laura's numerous opportunities for public
right.
input, and you set the overall vision. Strategic plan is set up more for specific actions. What are we doing in pursuit of that comprehensive plan? What the vision, so the overall vision of Story County, and I view this as more of an internal document trying to figure out how we're, if we were changing something in the comprehensive plan, which I didn't see anywhere in here, I don't know if you did, if we were changing something in the comprehensive plan, I'd be with you. This is simply us saying over the next 5 years, what are we going to do in pursuit of that 30-year goal that we set out in the comprehensive plan?
And I think where I noted was when we get a little further into this, that there was no mention of public transportation, which I was in mind, not for us to enhance and participate in the planning and offering of public transportation. And so, but the housing was, you know, my two goals. Okay. So, and that's why.
They should be our goals, right? This is our plan. They should be our goals, not your goals.
So that, I understand that. It's for everybody. It's for all of us to agree upon the goals.
Right.
So that was where I got stuck. I guess if you go to page 3 for the external challenges, for example, okay. I looked at an external challenge, and I put there increased demand for and rising costs of the human and health services, public transportation in rural areas, and affordable housing options, because I do believe that's going to affect us over the next 5 years as what we direct our staff to do. So am I on target in that? This is an internal plan, if you will, internal direction,
right,
about how we're going to provide services and help the county grow. And I believe we say at one point, make sure that all residents receive.
But, so give me the two that you, because I saw those two in here. So give me the two that you're worried aren't in here.
Okay, I saw the housing one in here.
Yep.
And so,
but you're referring to page 3, and you said external challenges, and what were the two that you just said?
Oh, well, it's listed 3, all about the increased demand and rising costs. Human health services.
Right.
Public transportation in rural areas.
Right.
And affordable housing options.
Okay, so I think you said earlier we address housing in this document.
Down for that.
Absolutely.
Correct.
So do you not think that
the bullet point, stagnant transportation funding with higher cost, addresses transportation? I mean, it's broad, but don't you think it addresses
I'll take it as a broad, then, okay. If we are looking beyond the infrastructure.
Absolutely.
And then I take that as a broad.
Absolutely. Okay. And when you talk about the reality that we're continuing to have to fund more locally, I mean, that's one of the reasons that we've increased asset funding by 94% in the last 8 years. Isn't that changes in state, federal funding? Doesn't that recognize that fact?
It does.
Okay.
And so if that's where we are broadly, then I'm good.
Okay.
Okay, because then we've addressed them. Just wanted to make sure we were not too narrow. Because the C2C plan does talk a lot about land use planning and economic development. So I just wanted to make sure that if we're all on the same broad page, then I don't feel any need to add that.
Okay.
But I wanted to bring it up.
Well, I read it as, so we want this challenges page. You're referring to page 3. We talk about what our internal challenges are and our external challenges. I believe we want those to be as broad as possible. And then we get into the specificity of how we're going to address those challenges later in the document.
Right.
You're good with that?
I'm good with that on page 3.
Okay.
Yep. Okay.
Leanne, you want to go through your presentation? So I've got a sense that, Morris, you're going to want to go detail by detail on some of this. Can we get through the presentation?
Yes,
we
can.
Right.
We can. Okay.
The presentation should actually fit nicely with that.
Okay, great.
I just want to comment on plan organization quickly. It is very similar to our last adopted plan. However, value statements have been added. Those are on page 4. Those are directly from the C2C plan. Felt it very important to make that linkage. And I want to back up. The very cover of it does indicate, or is indicative, that this is in support of the cornerstone capstone.
But this is, well, I think what's important to note there, this is the first iteration of our strategic plan that we're taking up since passage of the C2C. Our first two strategic plans, one of the primary focuses of those plans was getting us to a comprehensive plan. So it just makes sense to me that now that we've created Story County's first ever comprehensive plan, that we would fold that in and refer to that in our strategic plan. And that's the way I read this. Is that right?
That is correct. I mean, and so you'll see some themes of the C2C plan. The value statements should look very familiar to you. We also have defined goals. In specific areas. And those do begin. I had a slide on the internal and external challenges. Those should look very familiar, too, because they are, in essence, some wordsmithing of what we've carried forth from our current strategic plan, the last round of it. The value statements, sorry, discussed. The goal statements are grouped in 5 categories. Categories: quality of life, county operations, facilities and infrastructure, technology, policy, and regulations. I do want to point out, for whatever reason, when I converted to PDF from InDesign, there's another page 6 that is missing.
Right.
I found it actually today.
Yep.
And specifically, it lists out the goal statements for technology and policy and regulations. You see them later on in the action plan. But there's actually a page for those two that, for whatever reason, went missing. What I'm going to do then is I've taken the action plan elements for each objective and strategic steps, put them on the slide, and then guide you through some discussion with that. There is some organization matters I do want to discuss. The action plan, which begins on page 6, which the next iteration will be like page 7, has targeted goal, and that goal is what you see on pages 5 and 6. And then for each targeted goal, there are one or several objectives, and then those objectives have more specificity with action steps. I and JEO did not feel it appropriate that we assign a priority that is at your table, low, medium, or high. So looking for some feedback today and then through the remaining couple weeks as we reach out to management as well. It's a step, an action, and then office or department. And that's primarily who's involved, but who really does, who manages, who's the shepherd of that. Any questions on the organizational action plan? Okay. So if you want to just go to then the first one is under quality of life.
Yep, so we're page 7 or page 8, depending on
whether you're looking at the PDF or you're looking online.
Yeah, look on the PDF.
Yep.
The objective, the overall quality of life targeted goal is over the next 5 years, Story County will continue to invest in quality of life amenities for continued prosperity and success. The objective one is to expand public education outreach programs to raise awareness of resources, opportunities, programs, and services provided by Story County and its nonprofit partners. And I apologize to the audience. That is really kind of...
Boy, but it's going to be better on that new screen.
That's right.
With the new projector.
And the new projector.
Yeah, right? All right. That's why we're spending $49,000.
There are two action steps under that, and I'm not one to read the slide, so I'm going to just throw it to the board for your comment on the specific objective number one.
So objective one, anybody have an issue with objective one? And then we'll talk about the two steps that we have listed here. Okay. Two steps. Identify, first one, identify organizations and other key stakeholders that can help expand public education and raise awareness of Story County programs. Anybody got an issue with that statement?
None.
Is that a low, medium, or high priority?
I ranked it as medium because we already do a good job among all of our departments, and therefore, if they just keep doing the job they're doing now about just when they encounter a possible partner or they realize there's a new stakeholder, they're kind of reaching out themselves. That's part of their general job. They've incorporated it. So I rated it a medium.
Marty, you're good with medium?
I am fine because we already have alliances and cooperations in place that I think we're just addressing in a bullet point to what we're already doing.
Okay. Second action item, identify key topic areas to update or create new resource materials and training.
I rated it a high because things are changing so quickly, regardless of what service we offer. There's a fine tune or a tweak or whatever. So I think for us to really stress getting out there and getting the best and most recent information out to the public is a good service in itself.
Marty, you agree with that?
I'm inclined to say medium, and I'd ask Loris, as information, I mean, you know, as things change on an individual or a collective basis, I mean, shouldn't you just kind of almost wait for a, you know, kind of more of a linear progression, not just because something changed, we've got to do it? I mean, I'm not trying to say we disclaim anything that changes or adds, but it's just like, you know, I couldn't see that we may go to a printed piece of material that we just discard because all of a sudden something changed on a little, you know.
Well, and I'm with you on that. And I did go back and forth between medium and high.
Okay.
So I'm good on a medium with
it. All right.
Yeah.
So on each of these, you'll also see a row of additional partners. Mm-hmm. So I read that just what it says. One thing you don't see, however, our budget. The initial draft that the board did receive had some budget discussion. Really, as we delved into this, it's really, I don't want to say problematic, but it's almost foolhardy to start assigning budget figures or even where those budget, the monies may be coming from. That's once you get the details, you get assigned out, you start working on it, then you, through the budgeting process, we have a really clear defined process for that. So I wanted to explain what was missing there. Okay, objective two is to continue collaborating with public-private partners to facilitate housing opportunities attainable across all income levels. Rick, I'll take this one. There are three steps. Identify best practices to promote incentivized affordable housing. I'll just read all three and then come back to the priority. Step two, identify barriers to public and private affordable housing developments in Story County. And step three, identify resources and tools to help leverage the Story County Housing Trust Fund.
I'm good with all three.
Yeah, I just want to underscore that I believe that the additional partners are key in this one because the reality is, so the newly formed, and it's still newly formed, Story County Housing Trust Fund Board, we've invested substantial dollars, including taking the portion from our smallest communities and investing that, for them to get up and running. It just makes sense to me that while I agree with these three action steps, our primary focus, at least here initially, ought to be in support of the work of the Housing Trust Fund Board.
And as we've discussed this at the table, I continue to support that where we are going to definitely end up is with the Story County Housing Trust Fund and any cooperative along the way. And I had coffee with the president, or is Amber the chair or president of the Story County Housing Trust Fund? Okay, Chair. Just about a week and a half ago, and as we were discussing housing, and I had heard her come up with, she has a kind of a vision that I thought, boy, that sounds like the county could buy onto that. So, I mean, it's a constant forward motion, and Marty, you sit on it, so you kind of know where they sit now. I think there might be some other partners that can be brought to the table on various parts of affordable housing, and with the addition of the growth of the three factories now that are going to happen, so we're going to add, 400 jobs in the county, where is that housing to host those people going to come from? And some of that actually might be affordable housing, or the people they're going to displace in housing, if you will, if rents go up because there's not enough. That may create even a bigger demand for affordable housing. So I just think that we need to make sure that we are able to respond to needs that the Story County Housing Trust Fund may not be set up to respond to yet. And we be the collective community, not we the board itself.
Yeah, so I think I agree with parts of that. My issue is, I believe our primary responsibility, and when I say our, I'm referring to the Story County Board of Supervisors, is to help facilitate the Story County Housing Trust Fund Board becoming as highly functional as possible. Because if we're not going to do that, if we're not interested in these initiatives and ideas flowing through them, why are we investing the dollars we're investing in them?
Right.
Does that make sense?
Well, it does. And one of our options may be to invest to help them with that flow. So I just, as I look at all three of these, I view these not as us necessarily taking a strong lead. As I look at these, is still in our various capacities with the staff, with the Board of Supervisors ourselves, with, as we list there, community services, who have an ongoing relationship and knowledge of the market, and Veterans Affairs, who's very on top of the issues. I see all of us working and continuing to work together with these entities to try and find solutions, and some of the solutions may require a group moving forward in one area faster than maybe the trust can, or do we provide additional resources so the trust can move faster?
Yeah, and so I agree with a lot of what you just stated, with the caveat that I view all those groups working together through the Housing Trust Fund Board to make this happen. My fear is the way this is laid out, if Story County were to jump in and even take a soft lead, you said a soft lead, but I'm saying any kind of lead in this, rather than facilitating the Story County Housing Trust Fund Board getting up and doing it, you're going to get multiple groups pulling in multiple directions. And Morris, you've seen that here in Story County, what that looks like. Then nothing gets done.
Right.
And what I'm saying is, we helped establish the Story County Housing Trust Fund Board. We've got one of our members in Marty who serves on the Story County Housing Trust Fund Board. It makes sense to me that we would list these as our priorities and the things we want to get done, but we try to facilitate it happening through the Story County Housing Trust Fund Board, rather than running off on our own tangent and somebody else runs off on their own tangent and nothing happens. Let's focus in on where it can actually happen, and it can happen collaboratively.
So I can help visualize what you're seeing. So when I went down to the Iowa Finance Authority conference for those 4 days, and one of the ideas I brought back that actually Brenda Dreyer had spotted too, and we looked at it from a little different angles.
And Brenda Dreyer also serves as the vice chair of the Story County Health.
Right, okay. But she actually was looking at something from the federal home loan that just kicked up in one of the vendors. But was the fact that there might be some movement in trust going ahead and doing tax credit funding for affordable housing. So when I brought that back and asked to put that before
the city manager of Nevada and the executive director of Story County Medical, because I knew they were trying to look at getting rid of the North Campus. It was put in front of everybody. I said, I'll give you the resource numbers, you know, who you need to call, and then I'm out of it. All right. So are you saying that's something the Housing Trust Fund should have been doing instead, rather than me bringing back?
I would like to step in a moment, sitting on the board, listening to this conversation.
Right.
People should, Story County should know that we maintain Polk County as our fiscal agent. They lead our meetings. They help direct and shape our meetings. If you want to
talk about the Housing Trust,
Housing Trust Fund. Right.
We are in our infancy at best because it's an organization that is probably in learning to stand. It is not yet able to walk by itself, let alone run. We are likely to be in cooperation and with Polk County for years to come. And so to sit there and say the Sword County Housing Trust Fund is going to do this or going to be doing that, you have an organization that's not in the ability to affect or move very agilely at this point because we're just not there. So to represent it as something that, well, they can do this or they can do that, no. Then I'd sit there and say you're promising or offering a vision of something that's not reflecting in the reality. We did have the ability to affect on a small basis. We distributed over $100,000 to affect four communities on owner-occupied structures. We will be turning to the rental issue here. We will be taking onboarding new state money here going forward and having a discussion as to where we do the appropriations and to what level we will fund. So I just want to say, you know, I'm going to say pump the brakes on this one because we're not there yet.
You're putting at me, we're not there yet.
We are not there, as I say collectively as a member of the Story County Trust Fund. We are not there yet.
Okay. So, and then, so back to the question, should I have not brought back that information, given it to the
No, I think it was, but the part of that that I like best is, you brought the information back. You gave it to, that's right, you gave it to the stakeholders, and then you got out of it.
Right.
And that's really, Marty makes a good point. This is a new Housing Trust Fund board. It's relying on a lot of different entities to help it. But I believe if we truly want to make a long-term impact on housing in Story County, we do it by facilitating that group getting up and fully operational and fully capable of handling these things rather than us trying to run out ahead as Story County alone. What we see, if we've seen anything over the last decade, it is that when our cities, the county, everybody is pulling together, we can get a lot of good things done, right? If we start going in different directions, we're not going to get anything done.
So on this, then, as I said, I'm fine with everything, Leanne. Coming back to, all right, redirecting back here to the point here. All right, so so with that, I'll stop because
okay.
I support all of this. Yeah.
Perfect.
Okay. Any direction on priorities on these three? Or would you like to hold that discussion until?
I rated them as all high, but then that's the priority line is housing.
Marty, what do you think? You're on the Housing Trust Fund board.
I'm medium at the point that we are doing from this point a year ago to what we're doing now to where we'll be in a year. You're clearly going to show demonstrated progress. And Laura, so you know, you have been on Odyssey to visit all the communities, talk to any stakeholder on an individual basis, and you have the board's consent. And so, it's a little awkward to have you come back and say, well, I did this, should the Story County have a trust fund?
Oh, I'm sorry.
You're empowered to do what you want as an individual.
Mm-hmm.
Can't represent us as a collective, but you're doing it, and sure, you're trying to affect an outcome. I encourage you to do it, and good luck in doing it. And I look forward to hearing what you've got to say on your multiple stops across the county in the last 4 or 5 months. I would like to think that if you want to contribute something in a tangible way to the conversation in this sense, give us that information that you've got.
All right, so I'm hearing medium and high. I tend to come down more on the side of medium. You want to try to make the case to get any of those to high? Or would you just live
with I'll stay with medium with that based on what I've learned so far.
Okay. Super. Okay. Leanne, next.
This one is to evaluate, this is still means under quality of life, to evaluate partnerships to provide services, planning, and growth to all of Story County. There are five step action steps underneath this one. I will take each one individually. Identify partnership opportunities through state and federally mandated improvements with the Board of Supervisors and Conservation, primarily involved in that. Research and identify infrastructure funding opportunities to help aid municipalities and unincorporated communities, the Board of Secondary Roads and Planning Development. Continue involvement in the assets, which should be capitalized. Funding process to help determine human service gaps, the Board of Supervisors and Community Services. Assess connectivity needs throughout Story County, and this we're talking about internet connectivity, broadband, and so forth. Board and planning development, and then continue offering technical assistance to smaller communities to support growth opportunities. Again, the board and planning and development. Any questions?
I agree with all of those. Questions or comments?
Nope. They're all,
Where are we? What's our priorities? Our direction on priorities on these?
I went between medium and high. I think I didn't rate hardly anything low because they've already made it through the screening process. So anyway, but
if everything's high, then nothing is.
I understand. I was just I struggle with going the medium.
Well, okay, if we can are allowed to jump around, I'm going to tell you four is a high priority in my world. I live out in the unincorporated.
That's the connectivity. Trying to make sure that everybody in Story County has high access to high speed
as
internet.
As you see, education as it's practiced in the K through 12 setting throughout the county, a lot of school work on a day-to-day is done in that electronic manner. It's not the textbook, the traditional textbook, and you have kids going home to poor and spotty at best service. So we don't need to be impairing anybody's educational success because we don't identify it as being something that we should be addressing. So I'm a high guy on number four. If you give me the opportunity to jump.
And I agree with that. And I would go number five, I'd say, as well. We're already doing it. We're going to continue
doing
it.
We're not going to change anything.
It doesn't need to be a high priority to continue to do it. We're going to continue to do it. Good with those?
Yep.
Next, Leanne.
Now we switch to county operations. This is over the next 5 years. Story County will strive to improve all county operations, whether internal or external, present or future, so that each office, department, board, or commission can function with maximum efficiency, effectiveness, and transparency to the constituents they serve. Objective number one is to establish succession plans to ensure the smooth transition of leadership positions and continued success of Story County. Two action steps beneath that one. Number one is to work to identify key top-level positions that may become available within the next 5 years, and that would be the Board of Supervisors led, and then explore training and mentor opportunities to allow staff members to develop and prepare for advancement, again, under Board of Supervisors. Any questions or
questions
any
or comments?
I always consider one of the bedrock metrics of a successful organization is the ability to raise up leaders from within itself, so this really speaks to my administrator soul.
Well, our COOP-COG, which is Continuity of Operations, Continuity of Government, identifies this clearly as something we better be working on. I mean, so, we see every day that you can suddenly have gaps in your structure. And if you are not continually developing your staff and training to be able to fill those gaps rapidly, you're doing everybody a disservice. Laura's thoughts?
I agree with you on that. I think we're all on the same page.
These are both medium priorities?
I'm okay, because the thing is sometimes clearly, through a transitional period, you may not have anybody that you feel that you would do.
Right.
But when you do have them or you onboard somebody because they told you their story and they come with skill sets that you say, well, we can see where that would serve in later years. So I wouldn't push it as a high, but it's clearly a medium.
Yeah, I'd go with a medium. I guess the only comment in this, I agree with all of this. Just that since we are a public entity, we have a responsibility to make sure that we are always searching for the right fit and the right employee, whether that be internally or externally.
Sure, but developing your staff doesn't guarantee that they're going to get the next job.
But it's
still your responsibility.
It's still our responsibility to develop the staff, just as long as we're not guaranteeing, because
we always know
that we're going out.
You know good and well we're not guaranteeing, right? Okay.
Nope.
All right, objective two, Leanne.
Purposefully promote Story County's value and vision, use the work already completed as a starting point to develop a comprehensive mission statement for Story County. As I said earlier, we've incorporated the value statement, but we do not have a mission statement. So the step is to create a task force of key staff members to create an overall central mission statement for Story County.
It's time that we have a easily understandable, very clear mission statement for Story County. It just is not. I can't believe that we've never had one.
I rated it low, part of the reason I rated it low is because I think it's up in the intro here. I think that with all the steps of strategic planning and the C2C and even here in the update, that I think that that Keith's group of staff, if we form them, are going to quickly pull it out of here. So I guess.
Oh, but if they're quickly pulling it out of there, then it's a high.
Then it's a high because you can pull it. But I put it low as if everybody's going to devote a lot of time to it.
Medium, low means to me where are we putting this on our task list? Not how long it's going to take us to get it done, but clearly we can't do everything at the same time. That's why I said if everything's high, then nothing is, right? And what I'm saying to you is, so you say it's readily available, right? Our mission statement is pretty easy.
Tell me
what it is. Tell you're standing in front of a new group of employees in Story County, and you say, "Welcome to Story County. Here's what our mission is."
Our mission is to provide effective and efficient core services, mandated services, and to expand and enhance the quality of life and economic vitality for all members of our community.
Okay.
Right out of the top.
Yeah, but I'd say where does our commitment to social services fit in that? Where I just think we need to do a little deeper dive and take that, what is it, four paragraphs,
mm-hmm.
and it's got to come down to a statement, a mission statement. I think it matters. If it didn't matter, then you wouldn't see the biggest entities in the world spending time trying to boil their mission down to a simple statement.
Marty?
10 years on the school board, one of the hardest things I did in that time was come up with the mission statement you see posted at the elementary school here. And through the course of a school year, we got to the spring, and an 18-year-old student we had on the SIAC board is the one who came up with it.
Okay.
Because the thing is, I would turn you to the fact that I think Nike gives us the direction that Rick's probably speaking to. Just do it. You know who it's. You know who it's. The entity that comes from. It connotes movement, outcomes, positives. Boil it down. You want to be able to sit there and say that's Story County. We got a flag out front, and our flag's a little bit.
Yeah.
You probably need to replace that one.
Yeah.
That's another story for another day.
So we got it.
But the thing is, we should be able to say, this is who we are, this is what we do, the end.
I go along with you, too. I gave a reasoning and in the great scheme of hope. As we look at everything here, at least I feel that it's partially done already.
Super. Okay. Thanks. Next.
Objective 3 is to continue monitoring compensation and benefit strategies to attract and retain highly qualified employees. 2 action steps beneath that, conduct annual review of compensation and benefits, and conduct formal salary survey comparisons on 5-year cycle. Both of these are in our current plan, or an iteration thereof.
Yeah, so think about this. So back in 2011, we had 370 employees, and we didn't have an HR department. We hadn't looked at compensation levels, how they compared to other entities, other counties, other entities in our area in 20 years. In 20 years. Since then, we've started an HR, a great HR department. We've gone through on 2 separate occasions now and done a complete dive on comparable compensation levels. We've got all of our employees, whether they're represented by a bargaining unit or not represented on a bargaining unit, in a very clear pay structure, and it compares favorably to what others doing the similar work are getting. Why in the world would we not continue this? I mean, we have to. I view it as a low priority because we're already doing it, and we just need to continue doing it. You guys have any thoughts on either of those?
We're already doing it, and I guess I was kind of surprised to see, you know, this is something we're doing.
Yeah, but we weren't.
Well, no, I get that. That's a historical narrative. I'm just saying, in my time here, this is what we do.
Right. I'm the same way. We're already doing it.
I don't see any push or any discussions anywhere about not continuing. So I added a medium just because I've been anything we're already doing.
Because you can't go low.
I can't go. I did my low. That was my low.
We're doing it. It's a low one. We're going to do it. So I don't see this as a
press. Absolutely. Okay. Objective four.
To continue to offer professional development opportunities to unleash the full potential of county employees, increase employee engagement, to continue to create efficiencies among services, and willingness to accept unforeseen circumstances. Two steps. First one, identify opportunities to train staff members to improve interactions with customers. And then the second one, assess and develop opportunities to train staff to adapt to new situations and change.
I had both of those high.
So did I.
Good morning.
I had a missed medium, but then again, we're already doing it. We're training them. We're as we coach and expect outcomes in the interaction between staff and with the public. So you know, it's another narrative from the step down from the one above.
Okay, let's go.
Fine. That's not a problem.
All right, next.
Objective five is to continue seeking public-private partnerships where number possible and where mutually beneficial with one step, action step, explore new opportunities to establish formalized partnerships, such as 28E agreements to enhance ways to provide existing services efficiently and effectively.
I think it's important.
I had a high.
Okay. Yep. Good. Objective six.
To assess ways to engage, inform, and serve the public through online opportunities. Number one is to assess the means and effectiveness of existing online tools and services. And number two is a component of the annual communications plan, develop targeted media strategies.
You really think this internet thing is here to stay? You think we as government ought to finally jump on board to the online revolution?
I want to get ahead of it. I had high, medium, medium high. So.
Yeah, the fact that we just rolled out a new website here this spring shows you that this is already on our radar.
You good with medium?
I'm good with medium.
All right. Next.
We're switching to facilities and infrastructure over the next 5 years. Story County will continue to be fiscally responsible while financially supporting the ongoing needs to maintain and improve public facilities and infrastructure systems. Objective one is to continue to enhance park facilities throughout Story County. Step one deals with reviewing and prioritizing capital improvement projects as outlined in the Story County Conservation Board's current strategic plan report. Step two is to continue to conduct funding resources studies to identify grants and other outside resources to leverage Story County Conservation's current funds. So both of these are mostly specific.
But they reside with conservation, not with us. I mean, clearly it's part of our strategic plan,
right.
But this would not start with us.
Correct.
So I would suggest we ask conservation where they view these as low, medium, high. You do that, Leanne?
Yep.
Okay, next.
Objective two is to assess and provide for the ongoing operation and maintenance of existing facilities throughout Story County. Two steps include evaluate the long-term mechanical equipment needs for all Story County facilities. Step two is to assess existing and future storage needs of Story County offices and departments and facilities management.
I rated the medium only because we're doing this on an ongoing basis again, but we know we have some high needs.
I guess we have the CIP. Now, I'm with you on this, and I'm more of a medium person because the thing is we are probably on the wind down at animal control. I mean, this is something we bring to us as needs present or when the rope conversation we had earlier in the meeting as events present. But this is not something we wait for or something bad to happen. We clearly, Joby comes, presents almost at every meeting. We have contact with him on a regular basis. We know where we are. To be high is when you have a weather event that changes something that you did not anticipate. What we do on a planning basis, to me, this is medium.
I've got one word I want us to change, or at least consider changing on step number two, and I think we need to assess existing and future space needs of Story County offices and departments. This is bigger than just storage.
Okay. I have no objection.
That would reflect the conversations I've
had. Leanne, that doesn't screw things up if we change that one word, does it?
Nope.
Okay. Good.
Objective three is to continue to review facility access points and security for all Story County buildings and conduct study and assess need for enhanced security, both personal and facility improvements.
Yeah, sadly, this is a big deal. I mean, this is something that we're going to have to focus on. This has a huge price tag to it. This is much bigger than just the construction of it. It is figuring out a way to staff them. I believe we better start at the Justice Center, but I think this is a big deal for us, sadly.
I agree.
Yeah, some of the costs that you will see we incur with the infill at the Justice Center will reflect safety. Mm-hmm. Because that entrance will be changed, and it will be changed for safety to the point where it will likely be staffed and reflect the fact that that business which is conducted on a day-to-day in that building sometimes.
Yeah, you say it will be. I mean, so we went through the whole planning process. This is before this board was seated. We went through the whole planning process, and now that plan is sitting down in Joby's office gathering dust, and it's not anywhere close to being ready to be implemented, to the point that we may not have to start at ground zero again, but we're going to have to go all the way back if we're going to do this and go through the process. But I'm with you that it's a big deal. It's just we're nowhere close to having this done, and we need to recognize that.
I have a good feeling to know that we have an assigned balance, the proceeds out of the CLP sale, that we have a down payment towards whatever expense it'll be. So we're partially on the way. Clearly, conversation will have to be refreshed and take the stakeholders into account, but it will come before the board in the intermediate term.
Yeah, I've got this one as a high priority. Yes. I think we need to get to the end of that. We got to get to the end of the beginning of that conversation. All right, objective four.
To properly maintain a safe and reliable road network by identifying ongoing funding streams and assessing policies, procedures, and effectiveness of road maintenance programs on an annual basis. Review current processes to achieve efficiencies of 5-year secondary road construction program.
Hi.
Yeah, I'm so proud that Story County is back in the road construction business rather than just the road maintenance business. Darren's here somewhere waiting for his turn to come up and talk to us. Darren, you guys are doing a fantastic job. It's up to the Board of Supervisors to make sure that there's adequate funding for Story County to not only maintain its road network, but to continually improve its road network where appropriate. Hi.
Objective five is to maximize funding for Story County's bridge replacement program and reduce the number of load posted and inadequate bridges throughout Story County. Two action steps to meet this one as well. Review and update metrics to determine when to make repairs or recommend full replacement of county-owned bridges. And then research alternative funding streams to leverage bridge replacement funding.
Ditto to what I just said.
Yeah, it's hand in glove.
I had high, but I had a question. So since Darren is here, I was just going to ask Darren later. But it says review and update metrics. So aren't the metrics kind of set by the state and the federal government, or do you also do some of that internally to determine, you know, which bridges we're going to work on?
Sorry, dear.
We have guidelines on how we can spend money on certain bridges and if they meet the guidelines. Those are metrics we use for funding. How we select our bridges, of course, depends on funding, but it doesn't all depend on that. So, I don't know if that's the metrics this is referring to, but...
So there's going to be times, and we've gone through this before, there's times that we have more projects that we feel like need to be done than we have funding to do, and what metrics are we using when we decide, well, either we're going to do this one or we're going to do that one.
Right.
And we continue to update those as we go, and we kind of update them project by project as something comes to us. We just talk through what's happening. I think it's a good thing to note in here.
Okay. Thank you. Objective six is to expand the paved road network to encourage economic development opportunities and enhance transportation corridors. Three action steps, identify key corridors of unpaved roads with economic development opportunities. Number two, develop metrics to determine which roads get improved and which ones remain unpaved. And then lastly, seek out public-private partnerships to improve transportation networks where possible.
Those are all high to me.
I had high, and then one of them I had medium, but I'm good with high for all of them.
Okay.
Right now, switching to technology, the targeted goal is over the next 5 years, Story County will continue to make strategic investments in critical information technology, IT infrastructure to enhance the delivery of county services and programs to its constituents. The first objective is to conduct a needs assessment evaluating hardware, software, and IT infrastructure opportunities and challenges. The first action step under that, there's one action step, to assess and create a plan to address internal technology needs and upgrades.
I had it as a high.
I had it
but
as
yeah, look what we did earlier today, $49,000 by getting behind.
Yeah. Well, I think the money was well spent, and the fact that we got 13 going on 14 years of use out of something, that's good stewards of the public dollar. So clearly, you know, I'm getting tired of shades of pastel looking at all the presentations, but it was money well spent in 2005.
Okay, two.
To examine the comprehensive multimedia communications technology needs and outreach strategies for Story County, including deployment within courtrooms and public meeting rooms. Two steps, conduct internal multimedia technology needs of all the Story County facilities, and then continue planning for the new E911 system. Both fall under this one.
Yeah, so I have this as low and high, mm-hmm. one and two. We need to do the multimedia, but in terms of where it falls on our priority list, we got a lot of other things we need to get done first. The E911 system, that one's coming, and it's coming right now. So,
The top one, I can see medium, I can see low, but definitely you should have a very high on the 911.
I can accept the low. I had a medium, but I can go low on that.
Okay.
Yeah. Objective three is to identify necessary steps to complete network connectivity to all Story County facilities. Two action steps, establish cost estimate to extend network service to unserved departments and facilities. Step two is to determine alternatives to accomplish similar goals of network connectivity.
And those two kind of go together, right? So that, I'm reading that as you got fiber, you got microwave. Joel, I'm looking at you. We got multiple options for how we address these things. We're already digging in to look at how we do it. We just need to continue to do it. Is that fair?
That's correct.
I got it as low. I mean, continue to do it.
Yeah, I'm not going to argue on that one.
I guess I had high for the establish the network service, but medium, I think about how, you know, sitting, for example, we're upgrading animal shelter. We're remodeling it. Mm-hmm. Getting ready. They still can't get on our internet.
Right.
Right?
They're looking into that, I think, via microwave.
So I still would like to look at.
Isn't that the only facility, though, that we have in that state?
Is there anything else
that we have?
Okay.
And that's a one of one, and we're already looking that way. So that's probably, I would be fine to say.
I'll take a low on it.
Low, because the thing is, I see us affecting it, an upgrade soon anyway.
Sure. Okay.
Policy and regulations.
Yeah, the last targeted goal is policy and regulations that states over the next 5 years, Story County will comprehensively audit regulations and policies to ensure the values defined in the C2C plan are achievable and not at odds with what is currently being implemented. First objective is to continue to address water quality issues throughout Story County and consider strengthened regulations for wastewater management. There are three action items underneath this. Develop implementation strategies and identify necessary partnerships to build on the countywide watershed assessments. Number two, under the guidance of the Board of Health, review and consider regulatory and programmatic changes regarding aging and unlicensed on-site septic systems. And lastly, number three, acting as the drainage district trustees, proactively seek out innovative solutions to develop realistic and sustainable drainage solutions that positively affect water quality while acknowledging the antiquated drainage district law and practices.
And acknowledging that we still have to operate within, even though it's antiquated, within that drainage district law.
Yeah.
But I want to go to number two. So I'm fully on board with considering anything, right? But it's hard for me to reconcile discussing affordable housing back at the beginning and also discussing really beefing up, going beyond industry standards, if that's what we're talking about, for upgrading the requirements anytime at time of transfer or anything else with some of this wastewater stuff. And so I'm not coming down on a position for us of where we'd be. I just think you need to recognize that those two things go together. If you're wanting affordable housing, some of our most affordable housing are still on septic systems, and in many cases are on septic systems that have been there for a long, long time. And if we're moving beyond an industry standard where we start to look more at number of bedrooms than number of bathrooms and things like that, it's going to have an impact on the cost there.
I agree, and I guess I didn't read number two quite the same way. Because I read it as in those septic systems that are failing.
Yeah, but I also read aging doesn't necessarily mean failing. Thank goodness for that for the three of us.
Right.
Use the farm I live on as an example, because the system that is there today was new in 1989. Mm-hmm. Now it was sized accordingly to there was three of us living there at the time on the farm, and now there's four. And my conversation when I turned down to Margaret is, in her department, is the fact it's too small. It's functioning. It has been maintained. But I, to meet standard as it's presently practiced or proposed, would have to upgrade, and I don't know what that expense is.
And referencing the affordable part, affordable housing is not good housing. It's not what we want for our residents if they have failing electrical, failing septic or whatever. So I guess as I look at number two, I would like to, for us, take a look at what environmental health is actually thinking about. I understand you're talking about if you have to do bedrooms. I mean, that also is, if it's functioning and it's suiting for the family that's living there in the housing, then I don't feel we should go in and do anything also. It's the ones that we find out after inspection have been failing.
Sure. So I think you and I are coming down on exactly the same spot on this one. I'm not speaking against us having number two action step in here.
Okay.
I'm just suggesting that let's not take, so considering it is different than adopting it.
Correct.
Right? And I was just underscoring that we need to, we can consider whatever we consider, and I'm on board with that. Mm-hmm. We need to know anything we adopt has other impacts.
Right. It has, I understand, massive impacts. I remember Drainage District 5 discussion when Margaret laid out that map at the end and said these are all of the unlicensed septic in this drainage district. Boy, you watched the residents come up and take a look and wondering if there's one. Yeah, okay. So, yeah, well, I think we're on the same page.
Okay. Good. Where do those rank?
I consider water quality as a high, 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 especially after the amount of money we invested into getting all of our watersheds, getting that study done. But I understand maybe what we want is the implementation strategies for the countywide watershed assessments to be a high I would go with. And number three I might do a high on with the drainage district to the extent we can with our role. I would go with a medium then for number two.
Yeah, and the only thing I would change is I would suggest number one needs to go through the conservation board before we assign or start to assign any priority to the
Okay, all right.
Us.
That's fine.
Okay.
I would just offer up on number three as the drainage districts, because you're looking to, if you're looking for water quality solutions, that would be borne on an individual basis by property owners.
Right.
We don't have the ability as trustees to infect that. We maintain the facilities as they are. We operate in a body of law that is as old as the state, and those are our constraints.
Right. We don't even really have the power to incentivize it either.
That would come out of the private sector.
So you're looking at a medium instead? Or?
I would have to say there's tension on both sides for the fact that we have no ability. You can advocate all you want. You can bring the resources to bear, but then again, private property owners would have to take it up and implement it themselves. Now, if there's any dollars on a state or federal basis, clearly that would be nice to see, and I would encourage any property owner that has property that would fit under those guidelines to go in that manner, but that would be their decision.
Okay. Good.
So
good.
For three,
a medium then or a low?
What do you want on that one? I'm good with medium.
Yeah, that's where I'm at.
Okay. That's... All right. Final objective.
What is this one?
Outstanding.
To review land use regulations to address conflicts and encourage the creation of new public and private services and businesses to benefit Story County citizens. Again, two action steps. Review and amend as necessary current regulations related to nonconforming uses, home businesses, and mobile home parks. Then second, continue to coordinate planning and land development decisions between Story County and incorporated communities.
Yeah, number one is ripped right from the headlines, as they say in Law and Order, right? It's what we've been dealing with Crestview and then FinCo. And
right.
Yeah, we need to review them. It doesn't necessarily mean that we need to take a certain position on where we're going with them, but mm-hmm. we need to review those.
Right. Absolutely.
Everybody good with those?
Right.
Where's the priority on those?
We're already doing number one, so medium.
Good.
I put high for continue to coordinate, but we already are doing it, so I guess a medium based on my standard, you know, with the...
But I would even argue even lower than that, because when I think about the work program that we have for Jerry and his staff, which is who this is primarily going to fall to, if they got to not do something... So I love that we're reaching out to our smaller communities, but at the end of the day, the job of planning and development is Story County. And we want them in other time to be reaching out to our small communities. I don't know, Jerry, do you disagree with that? I know you got a lot on your work program right now.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm calling that one low.
Okay.
Okay. All right. Leanne, anything else for us to consider? Do you have enough direction from us?
I have enough direction, and following today, I will send this out to management email for comment, ask that it have to be returned, and then JEO will be here. Won't go through this much detail on the 30th. But we'll present any feedback that we received.
Super. Thanks, Laura Smarty, anything else?
No, I appreciate Leanne putting a lot of time just to get to the point to have a long discussion, because she clearly shepherded this through. Because, I mean, the cohort that came to these, what we present, what the presentation was, they met with us individually. They talked to us an hour or better. There was a lot of time got spent coming to this. To bring that to the public as we see today.
A whole lot of time, and Leanne deserves a lion's share of the credit, but let's not leave out Deb and Alyssa, who I know worked closely with Leanne, just to consolidate all the different comments and everything else to make it a cohesive-looking document. Fair, Leanne?
Fair.
Yeah, this is just one area, just one of the many you would fill out, but this is, I'm always just so in awe.
Okay. Good. Thank you. Next is discussion and consideration of Resolution 1937. Chuck, you thought we were never going to get here today.
No. Okay. So this is a residential parcel subdivision. The property owner is Jamie and Lacey Thielen. Chuck Winkleblack is the applicant. It's on a property located on North 500th Avenue. It's two parcels from Franklin Township. And I have the zoning districts, ambulance, fire, and it's in the Onion Creek watershed up there for you as well. So this is the location. I don't have a pointer. So there's a star on the two parcels up there where we're located. So we're approximately 3/4 mile to the north of the city of Ames. All lots will have frontage on North 500th Avenue, which is County Line Road. This is an approximate image of the proposed division. So again, it's of two existing parcels. One of those existing parcels will be platted as an outlot, Outlot A. Outlots, we cannot issue zoning permits for outlots. So it's just mainly Onion Creek. It's floodplain, the tree area around Onion Creek. Lot 1 has an existing dwelling on it and is approximately 2 acres. And Lot 2 is 19 acres approximately and would be buildable for a dwelling through this platting process. This is the plat that was included in your packet. A little bit more information on how they got into this current configuration with the parcel. The existing dwelling is built in 1900, considered a farmstead. So farmsteads are allowed to be located on a parcel under 35 acres in the A1 district. So in August of 2018, the farmstead parcel was split from the quarter, leaving the remainder, which is proposed to be platted as Outlot A. And then that parcel that has the existing farmstead on it is now proposed to be divided to create the two development lots. To allow those previous divisions in this division, there was an Ames Urban Fringe Plan Land Use Framework Map Amendment approved in June of 2018. So the majority of the area that is now designated as rural residential on that northern lot, it's kind of, well, on your screen, the lighter yellow, used to be natural area. That area is in row crop production, however, so it wasn't, I think you all found that it wasn't real fitting. And so that was amended to be rural residential. The tree area around Onion Creek's floodplain was kept as natural area, and that amendment did allow further divisions to happen in line with policies for that rural residential designation. Lot one that includes the existing dwelling, you can see, it's kind of hard to see. Sorry about that. It's majority natural area. However, the existing house is likely to be removed. You could build in that same footprint. That would be an acceptable solution for building in that natural area. Any disturbance to natural areas would fall under our mitigation requirements, however, in the land development regulations. But the City of Ames concurs that rebuilding in that existing footprint would be acceptable. Another note on the floodplain, you can see that this is a map of the floodplain. It stops in the middle of Outlet A. The county will be adopting, maybe in the future, new floodplain maps. Those floodplain maps do show the continuation of the floodplain west along Onion Creek. It may encroach onto Lot 1 south of that driveway area. So any development in the floodplain would require a floodplain permit, and we have shared that with the applicant as well, that could be coming in the future. Lot 2, again, is in row crop production, and is majority of it is designated rural residential in the Ames Urban Fringe Plan. That rural residential designation allows for dwellings at a density of 1 net acre, so we're far exceeding that at the 19 approximately net acres of that proposed lot. Other policies include mitigating impacts on agricultural production and the environment. It's unknown what a future owner would do keeping it in row crop production. You know, typically for a dwelling, you don't need to take a large area out to construct a dwelling if an area is in row crop production. And that size does allow for a significant buffering around with the adjacent agricultural operations, which we'll see here in just a second. It does allow for a pretty large lot. So you might not have as many conflicts depending on where the home was located with adjacent agricultural operations. And then once a residential parcel subdivision is approved, there can be no further residential parcel subdivisions. So a rezoning would be required if any, further divisions were proposed. So really you're looking at this pretty large 19 net acre lot size for a dwelling. Just a note on the driveway situation, there is a 300-foot separation distance and 500-foot site distance required for new driveways, the county engineer noted. And so a shared access would be accessible or would be acceptable to be used in this situation if either of those couldn't be met. I have some site photos. There's kind of a hill right in front of Lot 2. And then again, Outlot A is designated as natural area because it includes that tree area around Onion Creek. As part of the subdivision, there is an easement across Onion Creek that has been dedicated to Story County. This is the surrounding land use. I've kind of taken Boone County's beacon map and stitched it onto ours. So you can see Boone County is just to the west here. Jerry told me to this morning. Thanks, Jerry. So there's 5 parcels in Story County within a half mile of dwellings. All adjacent properties are zoned A1. To the north, you have an approximately 21 net acre parcel with a dwelling, and that is the Steenhope Environmental Services.
Go tell the go.
Yep.
Yeah. Right.
So we're familiar with that. To the northeast and east are 2 quarter-quarter 40-acre parcels owned by State of Iowa, Iowa State. The Beef Research Farm is on North Dakota, about half a mile to the east there. To the southeast and south, again, there's parcels in agricultural production with some floodplain around Onion Creek. And then in Boone County to the west, there are 3 adjacent parcels, 2 with dwellings, and the continuation of Onion Creek. Mm-hmm.
So, Amelia, when we did the urban fringe plan amendment, we also dealt with the property immediately south.
Yep. Okay. And so that property to the south is under the same ownership as this property owner. It's buildable for a dwelling. Once a dwelling is constructed, you could then go through this same residential parcel subdivision process to create another buildable lot. So this is looking south at 550th, and you can see Onion Creek. Engineering and secondary roads were out there that day, too. So you can see their truck there. This is looking northwest. There is a dwelling to the northwest across from proposed lot one. This is looking north. This is the dwelling on lot one.
It's not 550.
I'm sorry, 500. 500. I always call it County Line Road.
Yeah,
then I have to assign a number, I think. This is looking southeast at proposed lot two. So it's an agricultural production. I'm kind of in the right-of-way area looking southeast onto that lot. This is looking south on North 500th. You can kind of see there's a hill there that goes down towards Onion Creek. And this is just the field across the street from proposed lot two. These are the standards of approval. I won't go through them unless you've got questions. And then comments, we did wrap this for interagency review. We've kind of gone through our comments, floodplain manager comments, and engineers. Environmental health noted that there's no septic on file for the existing house. So both new houses will have to have septic apps in. And then if the property changes hands or is sold, any wells would need to be inspected. We mailed notification letters. We didn't receive any comments. There was one inquiry that I received yesterday, just trying to figure out which parcel it was. And then we routed this to the City of Ames and Gilbert as well, and they had no comments. Ames responded that they had no comments. So we conclude that all requirements are met for the residential parcel subdivision plat. Just some other points. Again, there's frontage on 500th. And a shared drive may be used if you couldn't site a new driveway off of 500th Avenue. The parcels to the north contains a single-family dwelling. There are some single-family dwellings in Boone County as well in the area. Five single-family dwellings within a half mile. And then just looking at the Ames Urban Fringe Plan and the policies for the designations that this is in, mainly for the rural residential designation, we look at mitigating impacts to the environment and agricultural operations. On proposed lot one, again, you could potentially build in the same footprint to not disturb more natural area. We have floodplain permitting requirements. There is an easement dedicated over Onion Creek as it crosses the property as well. And then again, for the outlot, no zoning permit could be issued for an outlot. And then regarding agricultural operations, if you constructed a house on lot two, only a small portion of that acreage would need to be taken out of production. And it's a pretty large lot in terms of only requiring 1 acre and having a 19-acre lot for a new dwelling. And so we'd recommend approval of Resolution 1937 for this subdivision plat. Any questions for me or the applicant?
So when we dealt with this with the urban fringe plan, I think everybody was really straightforward that, we were talking about two residents on this north border. I'm appreciative of the outlot that was created, Chuck. I didn't see that coming, but it looks to me like we're taking that extra step to really protect the area on both sides of Onion Creek. And I didn't know you were going to do this. I'm just really appreciative that you put this in. It just seems to me, in addition to our easement now, having that 20-plus acres along Onion Creek just adds to the reality that we're not ever going to do anything right along the stream. I just appreciate it. Questions or comments?
None.
Good.
I move the board approve resolution 1937, the residential parcel subdivision plat Leland subdivision as put forth in SQB 09-18.
I second.
Motion and a second. Further discussion? Amelia, good job.
Yeah.
Again, you could threw me off with the 550.
Right.
Well, I thought we were right there on the county line road. Chin.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. 1937 passes. Yeah.
Sexlavin.
Just one question there might be, when they talk about the footprint of the new structure, I believe will have to be further to the east because where it is now is out in the right-of-way with the expansion of the right-of-way. It's out in the setbacks.
And so what I heard is we're not going to disturb natural areas, and we're going to generally maintain the original footprint that was there, but there's some flexibility there. Is that accurate?
I don't think if we turned it in now with the new right-of-way and the new front yard right. setback, mm-hmm. if you look at your plat, it shows the house out in what is that setback.
Sure. And so when we did our site review, you know, there's a bunch of other structures on the property to drive paved areas. So, and we do have, if the natural area is disturbed, other protections for mitigation.
Super.
As well.
And so what I'm taking as we pass this is two buildable lots that you're coming out of this with. Mm-hmm. Staff will work with you on getting those two situated the right place.
Yeah, I was working with Eric on the right place.
Yeah. And there seems to be a lot of space there for lot two for a driveway. Chitty.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. 1937 passes.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Next is departmental reports. Darren Moon.
Come on down.
Darren, it's still raining.
Needs to stop.
It needs to stop.
Let's see. I'll skip this one. I put in a new slide this morning. I kind of wanted to show you the new graph of Skunk River as it stood about 9 o'clock this morning. Fortunately, the dots, that's predicted. The solid line, that's what's actual so far up to this morning. It's starting to show a little curvature, which is good because it might not reach that. Once we get up to about this stage, that's when we start talking about our gravel roads getting overtopped along the Skunk River Basin.
Mm-hmm.
As of this morning, West 190 did overtop. Fortunately, we've got that permanently closed. We don't have to deal with that anymore. That's one of the first ones that overtops. Cambridge Skunk is out of its banks this morning, but it's not over the roads yet. But it all depends where this 2 to 3 inches of rain are going to hit this afternoon, whether we get the gravel road in or not. So we'll see. So far, we're lacking out with the radar, but you never know what this afternoon's going to bring. We've had at least 4 flood events already this summer. It's a bit frustrating for maintenance crews. We made a lot of progress last summer improving roads, where this year we're just fixing things. So that's frustrating, but it's what we got to do. I put up this. The last flood event we had in September was kind of from Colo down to Cambridge. Just to give you an idea what it takes to get a 50 or 100-year storm, in a 48-hour to 3-day period, if you get that 6 to 7 inches of rain, up 7 to 8 puts you in the 100-year storm. We had 6 to 8 inches through that corridor, so we were somewhere probably between the 50 and 100 storm. That's why we're getting all the overtopping of our gravel roads. And this is probably the 4th time it's happened this year.
But only every 100 years,
though. Yeah.
3 times this year.
This graph may change in the future, though, the way things have been going lately. I showed you this map in the past. This is before that last flood event. Of the overtopping locations we had where water was over the road, and this is where it pretty much encompasses the entire FEMA event. So all the flood damage I'm going to show you from here on out is after the FEMA flood event, the September flooding. So these will not get reimbursed. Typical road washed out, gravel in the ditch, a lot of locations like that. This one, half the road was actually gone. All these locations are fixed already, but
for now.
For now, this is the pipe. It shows up our weak spots in our pipes out there. We get the big flood events. We get the holes in the roads show up. Pipe washing out again. Actually, this is the one, Rick, you met with these landowners. This is their house back in here, and this is, it's a drainage district area, and it only drains by tile, so when you get 6 to 8 inches of rain, it's going to pond water, and it's happening.
What you can't see from this photo is their house is completely surrounded by water. They were stuck at home, I think, for 3 days.
That sounds about right. This is one of the last places we get water to leave the road when we have flooding events. Lots of shoulder washouts like that. Pavements even washed out the shoulders, rock washed up on the pavements. This had a 2 foot drop right on the edge of the pavement that really washed out bad.
395th
or 3. This is S14 south of Nevada, a few miles. A lot of these pictures I'm showing you, we fixed this one once or twice already this year, and this is the probably the third time this happened. Again, rocks in the ditch, lots of shoulder washouts. And then some of the stuff we did accomplish early in the spring, some ditch cleaning, we didn't have vegetation established yet on some steeper areas, totally got blown out. You see tile in the ditch. We did have rock checks to help that, but it blew those out even. So a lot of erosion to fix. Riverside and Skunk River, we get debris a lot on the pier over here. This one, we had debris all the way across the river, so anything that came down the river was getting blocked. So we had to at least get this side open. So we pulled the bigger trees and got at least half the bridge open. See the size of those trees we pulled out. We couldn't get to the other side. It was too wet. Hopefully, this event will blow that out, hopefully not make it worse, but you never know how it's going to go. If you get the long trees that span the piers, then you've got a real problem. And then just overall countywide erosion. It's unfortunate. It happens. Marty, you know this one well. This is north of Olives. I just wanted to show this one again. Lack of a grass waterway caused our box culvert to silt in. But when you get these really big events, our box culvert is now cleaned out. So they cleaned the box out for us, but somebody inherited all the silt downstream.
The rest of our drainage district inherited all the silt. And go back to that picture. So the problem here, or one of the problems here, is where you can see the water running, look what else you see in there. I mean, we've got crops in there, and that should be, absolutely should be, a grass waterway.
It kind of is now. I don't know if it was done on purpose or just washed all the crops out and it grew.
I've had people that have approached the landowner and the tenant farmer over a period of years offering at their expense to put that waterway in, and they have been declined at every point. And that's a shame, because that is a chronic condition, that is water quality, mm-hmm. and that is the landowner choosing to not address it.
I've reached out to this landowner.
I know, you've got the battle on this one. That I talk to the farmers that are there or next to it, as you do too, and it's just like, I'm not saying something's a bad actor here, but this is where you get left with the fact, what can the county do to affect water quality? You're looking at it, what can we do?
Where we're getting to rock hauling this season, I showed you this on my last in July. We got a contract haul, the blue lines here. We actually added this area into the contract haul, so almost that entire stretch far east side of the county was contract hauled. We worked on this stretch with our internal crews and got that done. Had to re-rock some of that for the flooding, because this was the worst part of the flooding through here. What we were trying to do at the end of this season, we got 20,000 stockpiled in the Boone County gravel pit. We wanted to get out of there. We were hoping to start on that last week, but the rains just isn't allowing it. But we want to get all that gravel used up out of our, we've already paid for it, but we want to get that used up by the end of the year. FEMA repairs, just touch base quickly. I commented on that a second ago. We had $72,000 in gravel loss, about $26,000 in bridge and culvert erosion repairs, and then emergency response was about $16,000, so about $114,000 is what we're submitting to FEMA. We met with them last week, the FEMA individuals, for the first time, and we're getting all that put into their system for reimbursement. Fortunately, we were able to get a few other things done this year. It's hard to tell. It's really hard to tell with the screen here, but this is a bridge down by Hickory Grove Lake. We did a piling repair. There's just one bad piling in there. This is that bridge that the cap collapsed the 2 days before Christmas, and we fixed it last winter. We noticed on the other side a couple piles needed repairs. So we got that done this summer.
How old is that bridge?
Probably 60s it was built. Most of the wood bridges are 50s, 60s, and 70s. Guardrail, we're responsible for guardrail, even over the overstate, over the interstate bridges. We fix the guardrail, but the bridges are the DOT responsibility. It's hard to tell in here, but that's pretty much just suspended in midair. It's so rotten. Half of them were. So on 150th and 170th going on the interstate, we replaced all those guardrail posts. Mm-hmm. We were able to keep the guardrail and reuse it, but we got that done. You can see the interstate underneath. County shed, this is our Colo shed. They rerouted Ragbrite down a block because they wanted to go through Colo, and our shop guys here really wanted the shop to look nicer. It looked really rough shape with the paint and everything. So we're going to paint it, and at the last minute they're like, you know what, we know a guy that's got a metal bender, that, so they went out and bought sheeting. It wasn't that much more expensive, and sheeted the whole building, and it looks really nice before Ragbrite came through there. And picture of Ragbrite, successful as far as the roads perspective went. No incidents. This is R38. Very glad we closed the one lane down because just traveling down the other lane was difficult. They were coming down both sides. So that worked well. It's not easy to close the road. It gets 5,000 vehicles a day down, but it worked well. It was necessary. Moving on to construction projects. There's a listing of the projects for this year. We had 8. Quickly go through those. I want to point out this last one, the Jasper County Bridge, is the one they're building. We're splitting it 50-50. They're actually going to close that and start tearing out the bridge today. Wow, that is difficult to see. 3 yellow dots are the bridges up in this corner. This one is completed. This one is completed at the box culvert, but we're just waiting for the road to dry out before we open it. This one, they got the box culvert in, but we can't get it back till the soil dries out. This one is started as well. The bridge is out. We're just waiting for it to dry out to get the box culvert in. Sandhill Trail started as well. University paving is done. And West 190th up here was supposed to start last week with an overlay out in front of the Prairie Moon Winery Road, but that'll probably start next week now. Some quick pictures of University. Can't dig anywhere in the story, kind of a bunch of tile. So we had a lot of tile repairs to do. Those are short sections of clay tile that you see there. This was the paving crew coming in. We had a dry stretch, so it was perfect timing of getting this paved. The next week we got a ton of rain after we got it laid down, so at least we get the residents access on the pavement at that point. But the finish grading took a long time to finish. And then a picture going into town with a roundabout.
If you guys haven't been out on that yet, it's a beautiful road. What really well put together.
Yep. Again, we benefited from the I-35 paving and got the better concrete and the good paver with GPS controls and a very smooth road. Lincoln 5.
Something on a going forward basis, because we'll bring back to us in the coming years on paving, is that, you know, when you did it there by the co-op here in Nevada, you know, you marveled at the fact that, you know, with the GPS uplink on that paving unit, that's just makes for a smoother overlay. Is that going to be industry standard? Are we going to see that on all our paving projects?
It's not industry standard yet. I don't know if they'll make it, because you kind of eliminate contractors by doing that, because some don't have,
right,
they're very expensive machines, so until all of them can afford them, I don't see them making it spec, because then you eliminate, you know, the contractors.
No, but what it tells me is that anytime they're doing concrete work on I-35, we want to make sure we're doing as many, yeah, roads as we can do.
Yes.
We benefit.
Yes. Yes. That's the second win in that respect.
This is the smaller box in Lincoln 5. It had the high concrete head walls, and the bottom of the concrete was sucking through the top of the road. So this is replacing that. It's just a single box. So they just got that finished last week. We're just waiting for the road to dry out to get it open. This is the just picture the piling of the next bridge we're replacing. It was a twin box, a lot of box sections they brought in. Two single cells, so we were able to set it with an excavator instead of bringing a much more expensive crane in to lay it, so then we pour concrete in between the two. Like I say, they got the box in on this, they're just waiting to backfill until it dries out a bit.
So that way of doing it is relatively new. We've only been doing that a couple of years, right, where you're able to...
It used to be you
had to bring in the two box culverts built together, and we just started this.
We did it West 190th last year because it was so hard to get to the site that they would have to bring in a really big crane, so that was new for us. This is Sand Hill Trail Bridge, very narrow bridge, and the condition of the bridge. Our bridge inspectors, every time they inspected this one, they gave us a call and said, you really need to progress this one in the program. Had two spans, it's kind of odd. One's a wood span, one's a steel span. This steel beams were in terrible condition, worse than we really even knew, the inspectors knew. It's hard to tell, but the bottom of the web and flange are completely separated. It's sagging there, so there's like a 2-inch gap in between. That's how bad it was rusted.
We had trouble getting the right of way here, right? That was all.
Yes. They've got all the piling in for the substructure. They've got this abutment poured in concrete, and they do encasements around one pier. That's completed, so we got two more to do, and then we're pretty much out of the mud, and then we just do the superstructure. Moving on to construction project design, we're working on plans for 6 bridge replacements for FY19 and started the design work on 13th Street, 220th Street extension. That's in 2021, but we're going to have to budget the right-of-way in the FY20 that we're going to be working on here in the next month. New digital board signatures. This is hard to see, but we have... slowly working with the DOT, we do a lot of correspondence with the DOT, and almost everything's electronic now. The one step we don't have is when the board approves the contract. That's a hand signature and mail back and forth, and there's some issues with the timing. Within 30 days, they've got to have that approved. It's now mandatory. The board's going to have to do digital signatures. So what that means, the board chair only is going to have to apply for a digital access code, and IT's going to have to load some software.
We do it for some grants we already have.
Do you have that?
Yeah.
Okay. So we'll have to probably, we generally switch board chairs almost every year, so we'll have to switch that. But we had one letting, DOT letting in December, but we just pushed that into January so we could only have to deal with that once this year. Not a huge deal, but that's coming. Bridge rating due to legislation. This was a bit of a surprise. July 1st, there was one last-minute bill that they put a lot of stuff into at the end of the year. They snuck in a bill on bridges, and what they did is they allowed, there's in code, there's maximum loading for roads. There's a non-primary chart, and then which is our roads, and then there's a primary chart where the DOT roads. They allowed contractors to use the primary chart on the non-primary roads. They forgot to factor in that affects what goes over our bridges and what we have to rate the bridges for. So they usually ask for input before they pass legislation like that, but they didn't in this instance. So DOT estimates there's about 2,000 bridges that need re-rated. Just for Story County, we just approved our bridge inspection contract, and that increased it probably $8,000 to $10,000 to do that. This go around, it'll just be a one-time expense. But that was a surprise. And there was one bridge the DOT is using right now on 260th where they're doing over the interstate work. There's a wood bridge just to the east there that concerned me. It fell into this category, so we had to re-rate it quick, and it did require posting. And that kind of gets back to the bridge metrics. That's one of our metrics, is to reduce the number of posted bridges.
Right.
But that seems to be a really moving target right now. We posted a bunch of bridges last year because of a new truck law. Maybe that's not the best metric to use. Bridges are really hard to put a metric to on because there's a lot of variables in there. So we're getting more posted bridges, but we're getting a lot more bridges done, so we're not seeing the progress with that metric. So we might have to look at that again. The Northwest Ames Development and Traffic Studies, I set up a meeting with Ames to start talking about this area, Northwest Ames, and it was good timing because there's a new development proposed right here. This is Cameron School Road and G.W. Carver. that the city had already actually started to work on doing a RFP to get traffic study done for all these intersections you see with the circles on them. And at our request, they expanded it a bit north, so we're going to get the benefit of our new grant paving in West 190th put into the RFP as well as these intersections here. The two things we were concerned is this intersection of Cameron School, maybe looking at a possible roundabout there, and then what to do with Grant and West 190th. Our concern is when the bike trail gets extended to the south here, we're going to have to cross the bike trail across West 190th, which is not a stop condition right now. It sounds like the development here might be a bit delayed, so we might have a little more time to figure out the best course of action. We talked about that in our multiple disciplinary committee, which is sheriff and DOT members, talked about safety of stuff in Story County. The city had an idea maybe put some sort of school zone out here to reduce the speed limit. That'd be really about the only way to reduce the speed limit out there. It might only be at certain times, but that may come. But the RFP for the traffic studies was due late September, and they hope to have a draft done, I think, by the end of October. And that'll kind of tell us what to do, especially with this intersection here. If a roundabout is something, we can partner with the developer, City of Ames, and do a cooperative project there. That should come out of the study and see how we should proceed.
And that's the primary focus. So I should say that Darren and I really appreciated being able to meet with the traffic engineer at Ames. Yeah. And he was fully on board that this area is a priority with everything that's going on, and figuring out specifically, while it's not the only intersection, that intersection of Cameron School Road and George Washington Carver has to jump to the forefront of what we're going to do and how we're going to do it.
This is the Grand Avenue in West 190th. Just a quick picture. A roundabout would be difficult here with this residence is so close, and the road's already kind of bent around that, because we had difficult buying right away 20 years ago when we paved this. And then it drops off quickly over here, so a roundabout might be difficult there. Cameron School and GW Carver is a much better possibility.
It's flat ground. This is developed some, but I think if we push it a little bit to the west, it would still be doable at this point before it develops too much further.
It means working with the church and the developer on that southwest property.
The 280th Street Skunk River Bridge closure, we're still working with the county attorney to come up with a closure agreement before we bring it to the board for your review and action. We're still going through iterations on that. We did get it ready to open. We posted 8 tons. Unfortunately, one of these signs has been stolen already. This one was stolen.
Dead end road.
Yeah, well, you get them closed, and then you get a lot of vandalism, which I'll point out here, too. We put up a lot of signs for conservation this summer, canoe access signs, the drainage basin signs, and this one only lasted a week. This is the canoe access sign before it got vandalized, and I blocked out some verbiage up there. I didn't want a presentation.
Thank you.
Can only imagine.
Road use tax. This is just an FYI. I didn't realize the impact really that Ames annexing Lincoln Way was going to have on our road use tax allocation. It had a higher impact than I thought. There's a pretty complicated spreadsheet formula. This is the statewide road use tax fund. It gets real complicated here, but this is the Story County portion that comes in. Once they give that, $475 million to counties, then we divvy it up and allocate it with all the counties with a formula, number of bridges, vehicle miles traveled. But because Lincoln Highway had over 5,000 vehicles a day, and it was one of our main paved roads, it really impacted probably 3 to 5% of our allocation. So we're talking a couple hundred thousand a year we lost because of that. A little more than I thought, but I just want to make you aware when we get the major roads annexed, that happens sometimes.
Well,
fortunately, this time 21 completely made up for what we lost, because it was much higher this year than anticipated, so it doesn't impact our budget, but going forward.
Well, on a proposed basis, as you look at our five-year plans, paving is clearly in the wheelhouse there. As paving would probably drive traffic counts, would that not bend it back in our favor? In the unincorporated
when you say, okay, that's annexed into the city of Ames and it used to be in the unincorporated, mm-hmm. and it was driven on the traffic counts, would that not be?
I think you're correct, and the more miles we pave, can add to that system.
Right.
So, if it meets that kind of traffic count.
Oh, that's what I'm saying. Yep. I suspect pavement drives traffic.
I mean, in essence, though, Marty, so what's happened by Ames annexing all the way over to the city of Nevada, basically all traffic, whether it goes on Highway 30 or on Lincoln Highway now, all traffic that flows between Ames and Nevada is never hitting the county road anymore. It's staying either on DOT or it's city to city, and that's a substantial number of vehicles. Now, where you're 100% right is, let's say we do go ahead and pave the extension of 13th Street all the way across, that would be a county road, and we would clearly, we draw Morris every day coming across on that road, right? And so that will change the formula again.
That's where I was going. I'm probably just
let's start out by pointing out that this is not our project.
Yes, correct. Iowa DOT project update. Not ours. Yeah, this one more than likely delayed till spring opening. It's moving forward, but slowly. This one, they're doing a project down at 330 and south at Collins, Highway 65. This is causing us some issues on our gravel roads. This is the DOT 511 website shows the detour route. They originally had it going up here. This was a couple miles of gravel they had their detour on. They didn't realize it. So even with the new detour, we're still getting a lot of traffic coming up this road here. So we're having a hard time, especially with all the rain, keeping that maintained. And it keeps delaying the project opening. All the rain does, too. It's supposed to be open 2-3 weeks ago, and it's still going. So we're struggling with that area of the county right now. And lastly, I wanted to point out there was a revised environmental impact study that was done for the 580th interchange to account for some of the changes they made in that. And this is the current five-year program for the DOT. They have construction in 2022 now of bridge and lighting or bridge and grading, about $6 million, and then $7 million in paving in 2023. So that's for the 580th interchange. This is new. I'm not exactly sure what this is yet. They got $6.2 million in just in 2020 right here in Nevada. I don't know if they're just redoing the pavement. It doesn't say bridge or anything, so pretty major investment going in Nevada, too, just in 2020.
But nothing in the program that impacts 590th or 600 at this point. I mean, we need to pay close attention to that.
And that environmental impacts that I think addressed that in there as well, that 590 was going to be left open for right now.
Right. But the other concern I've got is 600th. If they ever want to come in and try to restrict access there, we've just spent $1.5 million to repave that. So let's just make sure we're on top of every conversation DOT's having about that corridor.
More grade release renewal. We had a meeting on that a couple weeks ago with an update of the numbers. We have a final draft that's ready for board approval, but we have to have the public hearing on that first, and that's set for October 23rd. And that's where I'll give you that final draft, and then we wait 30 days for final approval. Drainage district issues, DD20, of course, still. We turned the railroad crossing over to Kent Rohde to design and get some bids to bore under the railroad with a new tile there. Further north, we have still the issues with we need to get that solid tile put through here. I heard from Mr. Hunter again last week. He wants a tile put up here as well, connecting over the district tile. His concern is we had talked about vacating this road after we put that tile in. There's a row of trees here on the opposite side of the road. He's concerned about those roots pluggings that he'd be responsible for in the future, so it wouldn't be that much more costly to put a solid tile through there, so we'll do that as well.
Well, and the main purpose of doing that is you can see the water. Go back to that.
Oh, yeah.
You can see that. Right. Basically, the water just sits there. It doesn't go anywhere.
And he's at his business where his LP tank was floating, so it gets higher.
Never a good thing.
But I do want to point out, at some point, he did have good news that the tile seemed to be working really good over here. So it's still working good, but
I plan to get better. We have got about a $5,000 estimate right now with a rough estimate on what it would cost to do that. I think it's going to come in a little bit higher than that in the end. So I'll get a more detailed estimate, and I'll bring it back to the board probably in the spring. Then we need to decide what you want to do with that, if you want to have a public hearing, because that is just going to be pretty much spread amongst the residents in Fernald.
Right.
So it's going to be a pretty decent bill for them. Whether you want to have a hearing for that or just move forward with it. Once I get the detail, that's when I'll bring that back in the spring and we'll have that discussion. CenturyLink issues, want to touch base on that real quick, because the board, you approved the utility permits after I look over them. Utilities in general are kind of a railroad issue for me. They're difficult, but we just have to deal with it. CenturyLink had three issues come up in the past few months that were difficult to deal with. Marty, you involved with one up on 510. They went through and at least three tiles were damaged, and we had a hard time getting them in to fix it, and the farmer wanted them fixed right away. They did fix one. Ted Landy fixed another one as a contractor, and then we fixed the third one that was found, so that has been resolved, but there could be more tile we could find later. This one was down on 265th. Contractor was in there to put a new line in. Landowner was actually standing there and telling them there is tile there, do not go through, and they just ripped it completely out of the ground, and then they up and left. They apparently fired this contractor. I don't want to go and fix it because I want the CenturyLink to be responsible for these, because they just don't care sometimes. And if you don't make them responsible, we go fix them and just bill them, but I just assume they'd be responsible for fixing them. So we're still trying to get them out there to fix that. This was probably 4 or 5 months ago. The contractor has been selected to fix it. I talked to him last week, and hopefully this will get done. What I've done is I've told CenturyLink I'm holding all utility permits. I technically probably can't do that. We have to allow utilities to use the right-of-way. What we can do, if it becomes a real issue, is make them submit a bond up front, $10,000 bond. DOT has it in their policy if they have a difficult contractor utility that they can require that. So they're showing some action. The third issue we had was on the university. A lot of utilities had to be relocated to do our paving job, and some of it still isn't done. It really delayed the contractor, and it gets really frustrating, but that's just working with utilities in general on construction. It's not their top priority, so we're getting it all resolved, but I just want to make you aware.
Yeah, and I would say make sure that our civil attorney is involved in all this every step of the way. And if it's time for a recommendation that we start requiring a bond, let's start requiring a bond. Just bring it to us.
Oh, I just had a picture. I mentioned it at the last board meeting that the combine had fell in a district hole. It wasn't quite as big as some of them would get, but it was, 2-3 feet deep. It was enough to catch the combine and fall in and cause some damage to the combine. So we got it fenced off right away, but we get a lot of those in district tile, and some could fit like semis in.
But at least it wasn't on a paved road as our neighbors to the north have with the sinkhole.
Yeah, that wasn't a good one. Lastly, we're interviewing for equipment operator one position, interviewing this week for that. So hope to get that filled before winter plow season.
Good job. Thanks, Darren. Thanks to you and your staff. Any questions or comments?
None.
Super. Thanks, Darren. Yeah. All right, Lisa Mark is going to talk to us about our quarterly financial report. Expenses are lower than budgeted for this point of the year, and revenues are higher. That's a good thing. What else do you have to tell us?
That's about all I got to tell you.
Okay, perfect.
We have seven departments that are above the 25%. Most of them aren't very far above the 25% of their budget right now.
Right, only IRBM is substantially above, and that makes sense just based on their season of doing work.
Correct, and they paid their spring contract, which is a lot of their budget anyway, so they've already paid that.
But 25% of the way through the year, we're 19.64% of our expenditures.
Right. As you can see from our fund balances, we're rolling along just fine. We're under 25% on all of those. Well, no, not, again, general supplemental, we have to pay insurance right off the bat. Revenues, we've got 13 departments that are over 25%. which makes sense also. As you can see, we've brought in about, in the countywide, we've brought in about 41% of our revenues. That means that we've collected about 40% of our taxes at this point in time. So, questions?
No. Pretty clear, straightforward document. Appreciate that. Straightforward document, and we are in solid position. Anything that's concerning you, now that we've done this second appropriation, anything that's concerning you that doesn't have something to do with elections?
No.
Okay.
Not so far, so good.
Good, good. Thanks, Lisa. All right, public forum number two is an opportunity for members of the public to comment on really anything you want to comment on. Anybody wishing to do so, come right up to the microphone. Seeing no one moving to the microphone, liaison assignments, Marty.
Spent a good share of last week in Bloomington, Indiana. Big fan of Bobby Knight in years gone by, but that is not a town you want to live in. As we have had the opportunity the last 2 years to go to peer communities as identified by Dan Culhane and his team to see what the overlay of Ames as a university community and others across the United States are, I would have to say that the government that the state of Indiana provides for itself is cumbersome and Byzantine. And their idea of fixing something is forming another committee. And it is a town that has not kept up. What we take for amenities, what we take for new construction, what we just assume is going to be a natural progression, they argue about slow walk, and if not, the county runs at odds against the Republican county runs at odds against the Democratic community, and basically all you get is standstill. That's it. Story County and Ames and its communities in it do a pretty good job of taking down the silos, and I would encourage, as I said to several of the elected leaders there, you need to come to Ames and hear our story, see our story, and see if you can't do some takeaways, because I wish Chuck Winkleblack, who was just there on that trip too, could have been here to comment too, because I don't think that he would have said it any different, because that is a community poised with the employers that they have for growth. They don't have the mechanisms in place to get there. That said, as I spent a good share of 2017 and a little bit of 2018 driving my son across the central United States, upper central United States, on football recruiting, I got to really appreciate what you saw in Minnesota, South Dakota, and North Dakota as far as signage on creeks and whatnot. And I'm glad to see that as I drive around Story County now I have a sign on a bridge to represent that creek that tells me, okay, I've always heard of it. Now I know expressly where it is, and I build that into my knowledge base.
Not just that. You got the signs up on the high country for watersheds, too.
My only hope after listening to Darren, nobody steals it.
I thought about that because they are very attractive. But I see them every time, and I think, boy, I'm glad they talked to me.
We did that.
Yeah.
He did that.
Yeah.
I'm done.
Good. Yeah, so I'll underscore what you said about the importance of breaking down the silos. It hadn't always been that way here in Story County. There was a time that we had what was affectionately known as the DMZ between Ames and Nevada. Well, now you've got Ames and Nevada working together. There was a time that we didn't have an urban fringe plan to work around the city of Ames. You remember that well. You covered it all for us. What we've done a really nice job of as a board is to encourage, facilitate, and participate in breaking down those silos so that we do come together for the good of the overall. We got to continue that. It's an important part of our mission as Board of Supervisors. Loris.
Okay. I'll go very quickly.
Please.
Right. I went to the Collins Wellness Center and took a tour of it last Tuesday. I was very impressed. It was impressed also to hear. They've got equipment everywhere there. They're having people come in for yoga. They've got, I believe, about 120 members. And they sometimes have 10 to 15 members using it at the same time. It has become the new gathering spot. Herta, we met. Given the insurance situation, we did vote to require our contractors, drivers, to attend training at Herta within the next 30 days. This will be a one step at a time, 30 days at a time, as we go ahead to try and get the insurance rates lowered and we figure out what we're going to do. The Historical Alliance meeting, fall meeting, was just a few days ago. Marty made it finally, and now you guys were pretty good.
Yeah, oh, was it just that long ago? Yeah, well, you know, time and real estate ages. Anyway, the main things I heard is that we've got two new communities, Collins and Zeering, who are both trying to launch their own historical societies. So they'll need to have some information about how they can be a recipient of some money. We've got well-established ones. Everybody has some kind of need for an infrastructure need, whether it's to shore up the museum basement in Maxwell, or there's just some kind of display cases needed for the Collins one, et cetera. So there. So this week, I'm going to be headed to Future Ready Iowa. I'll make at least the afternoon sessions here as soon as we end. We've got the Ames High School Career Fair, right? You're lecturing also tomorrow?
Yeah, I've got three different lectures.
Yeah. Did you do anything, PowerPoint or anything for it? Well, would you mind sharing it, or...
Well, you can look at it, but yeah, okay. But I mean, it's specific to what I'm doing. So,
oh,
yeah.
Okay. All right. Oh, well, all right. If I can
it's
look at it, then
the
I'll add. I'll
it's open
edit.
To the public.
Okay,
course,
great.
You can attend.
Okay. No, I just wanted if he put together some slides already. Transportation Collaboration meets this week. Boost. We're going to be meeting with the caregivers and talking about how they get their grants, their scholarships, and look at that formula. Young Child Wellbeing Collaboration, YSS got the grant, and so I'll be there on Friday. And then we're also meeting with school officials, and we're meeting with city administrators the next week. We're busy. Thank you.
We're always busy, yeah. So I continue to try to work with our regional CEOs around the state, our mental health CEOs, and the Sheriff's Association, just trying to make sure that we're putting our best foot forward as we go to our state representatives and propose possible solutions to the very real funding crisis that's going on in mental health. It's ridiculous that we're providing services and our service providers are not receiving timely, accurate payments for those services. It's problems severalfold. I mean, you'll hear some people complain about the system that we're in, but the reality is, if they're being intellectually honest, we've never had a system that worked very well. All the way back to the old county home days and then equalization days. I look at Deb because Deb used to wrestle with these systems. We never had a system that really worked well. It's time to dig in. And whatever system we're in, that's fine. We got to fully and reliably fund it, and we got to make sure that those entities providing the services are getting paid in a way that they can actually continue to provide the services. I know I'm committed to that, and it's fun working with other people in the state who are absolutely committed to that, and we'll see what we can get done with the state this year. Outside of that, like Laura said, we've got a lot going on. Anything else for us? If not, I'd take a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Adjourn.